you know any places any Sega nerds hang out around here?
Welcome to the Sega Nerdcast, episode 94. I'm Chris, the editor of Sega Nerds, and with me this week are my buddies Marcin, Kopke, and Jason. How's it going, fellas?
Hello.
How's it going?
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yo.
Happy holidays.
I know, we're coming to you guys just a few days after Christmas, actually the day after Christmas. It's December 26th. Hope all you guys had a good Christmas. How was your guys' Christmas?
Decent, full of wine. My Christmas was full of wine and presents, so it was good.
Nice.
And Star Wars. It was full of Star Wars.
Very, very nice. So, on this edition of the show, we are going to be doing a year in review. So, we're going to start with January, and we're going to work our way all the way back to December, looking at all of the biggest pieces of news throughout the year as it relates to Sega. And so we're going to go month by month, beginning at the end of the year or at the beginning of the year, and we're going to work our way back. But before we get started, I just wanted to go around the room really quickly, since it is the day after Christmas, and see if you guys got any cool Christmas gifts that you want to talk about, anything maybe Sega-related, video game-related, or even if it's not, anything that you guys got that you want to share.
Well, I got clothes.
I got adults.
That's the worst gift you can give anyone.
Clothes. Actually, now before I was like, yeah, I don't want clothes, but now I kind of want clothes because I think I ripped 3 pairs of pants in the past month. So I'm either getting fatter or I don't know. Maybe I wore them too much.
or your pants you wear just older.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
But yeah. I got some games, but I got them from the beginning of the month. And actually, what I bought for Christmas will arrive sometime January. So let's say for now that I don't have so much presents.
Well, I got stuff. I just gotta reach over. I got Sega related stuff too.
I saw on Instagram that you got some stuff, Jason. So you gotta talk about that.
You have to share at least.
I do have to share because I finally got my Indie Heat.
Oh.
Unreleased, and I finally got a repro of it.
So I'm not very familiar with Indie Heat. What's going on with that?
Basically, it's if you've ever heard of Super Off-Road, it's a sequel to Super Off-Road, but based around Indy cars. So,
and it was unreleased?
Yeah, this version, from what I'm told and from what I've found out so far about it, is that TradeWest was working on it. It was licensed and everything to be released. It was about 95% finished, and then it never got a release. So, minus like a limited run of reproductions back in like 2011, I think somebody found the prototype and then just went nuts with it.
So they ended up finishing the game to make it, I guess, releasable?
It's playable as of now. It's pretty much a 95% finished port. I just don't know what the other 5% unfinished is as of yet.
Probably the
I need to experiment
ending.
With it for a little bit. Yeah, I mean, it didn't really have an ending. I mean, Indie Heat, it was pretty much a circuit, and then once you finish the circuit, you just do it all over again. So,
very nice.
I don't know. And then I also got me a Double Dragon 2, because the Japanese version's going for, like, $150, and I don't want to spend that.
No.
And it's a damn good port of Double Dragon 2. And then
I remember
also
playing that one. Genesis.
Yeah, also a couple SNES repros, and that was about it.
Very cool. The wife surprised me with a birthday present, because I just happened to be born on Christmas, so I get some double gifts on that day, but I got Splatterhouse 2 on Genesis, which I've been looking to pick up for a long time now. Around Halloween, I got the first Splatterhouse on Turbo, and so I've been trying to get the rest of them. And she also, it hasn't arrived yet, but she also got Skies of Arcadia on Dreamcast, which I'm
nice. Really...
That game is going for a lot of money these days. I was looking on eBay. It's just crazy how much retro games are skyrocketing in price. Mm-hmm. It's getting to the point where eBay really isn't the place to go to fill out your collection these days. Like maybe if you just need like a game or two to round out your collection, it might work. But it's just it's so
expensive,
budget friendly these days, because everything there's no more auctions anymore. Everything's buy it now. And it's just everything's jacked up in prices. It's just it's not fun like it used to be.
I've had better luck with Amazon as opposed to eBay. I mean, when it comes to certain things, I have better luck finding imports on eBay, if anything.
Hmm.
Or AmiAmi.
Yeah, AmiAmi as well. That's where I got my quote unquote Musha.
Right. So let's go ahead and get started with the year in review now. So let's start it up in January, and what I want to do is, before we get started, I want to share my screen. Let's see here. There we go. All right, so let's start off January 5th.
Seaman.
The news came out that Yu Saito, who is the creator of Seaman, and Devolver Digital were possibly collaborating on a Seaman sequel. So basically what ended up happening, Fork Parker, he's Devolver Digital's chief financial officer, tweeted Sega asking them to develop a Seaman sequel. And, you know, there's been times, you know, throughout, you know, its history that, you know, there was rumors and stuff about a new Seaman sequel, but it never came to pass. And so he ended up tweeting Sega. I don't think Sega did much back. But then Fork Parker went to Yu Saito and asked if he still had the rights to make Seaman, and if so, he wanted to help make him a new one. And Yu tweeted back soon after and said that he said hi for smartphone. And so that got a lot of people excited about the idea that maybe Yute and Devolver Digital could be collaborating on a new entry in the Seaman series for the smartphones out there. But I don't know if... We didn't really hear much about it after that, so I don't know if there's any behind-the-scenes movement going on or what. But we didn't... You know, it didn't seem like a lot happened after that. So, I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think we'll ever get a sequel to the Seaman series, or do you think maybe anything is happening with that?
I think it will go on. I think it's probably to happen. Like, sometimes that guy, Yu Saito, tweets something about, like, working in Seaman-related stuff, but aside from that, we don't get much else. Yeah, recently, like a month ago, he was tweeting about Seaman. And that, like, gives kind of a quote.
I bet he was.
I mean, it could work as a mobile game if you really think about it.
It would be perfect as a mobile game. If any of Sega's Dreamcast games would translate well to mobile, I think Seaman would be one of the perfect ones.
Except the only problem is that Leonard Nimoy only narrated it, right? He didn't actually, did he voice Seaman too?
Yeah,
no,
he did.
No, no, no.
You're right. He was a narrator of it, but I mean,
because I was gonna say he passed away this year, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So I was gonna say they're gonna need to get a new narrator.
But that's the least of the problems. Like,
right?
I'd want Benedict Cumberbatch as the new narrator for
the other thing is that Sega doesn't do that much for this franchise, so it's pretty much likely to happen without Sega's approval. So,
yeah. And I feel like they're playing it safe nowadays, and they're looking for quality titles. So, I mean, even if it was going to be developed, it might take a while before it gets Sega's seal of approval.
Well, it's not a license that depends on Sega. It was one of those games that, you know, when they make someone develop it and they publish it, so the developers still have the rights, not Sega. So
mm-hmm. It was an exclusive to the Sega console.
It's weird, though. I mean, I don't know if we've ever found out, like, exactly. Because Sega still did these crazy deals. So it might be the fact that he owns some of the rights to it, but Sega owns publishing rights to the name. I don't know. It's weird. A lot of these deals are really strange.
Maybe so Sega owns the assets for the original, but the guy still owns, like...
Well, there was a Seaman 2 that came out on the PS2, right? I think there was
in
a...
In Japan, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not like it's exclusive to a console, because clearly they don't make consoles anymore, so... But
it was published by Sega.
It was published by Sega, yeah.
The sequel was too, or just the original?
Both.
It might just be Sega having publishing duties. I mean, that's the only other way I can think of it.
Yeah, so let's continue on. We're going to go to our next story, and this happened on January 14th, and there was a shooting outside of... Sega Sammy CEO Hajime Satomi's house. And so the story goes, the security guard at Satomi's Tokyo mansion reported a loud noise at around 3:30 a.m. on January 14th. One of the lights outside of Satomi's home was found shattered. There were three bullets found near the scene of the crime, along with an empty shell casing in the road in front of the house. Neither Satomi nor his family were home at the time of the incident. Police are currently continuing an ongoing investigation. There have been no previous threats of this nature against Satomi or Sega. So that was some crazy news out there. And man, Satomi, he's rocking a pretty badass mansion out there. Sega must not be falling on too hard a time.
They're not broke. Look at that shit. What the hell? He probably has security.
I don't know what's with Sega that they have much to do with Yakuza and stuff and stories like that.
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be the Yakuza, right? Like, maybe he did something wrong and they're either putting out a hit on him or it was just like a warning that they sent.
Or they were like, hey, include our clan in the new Yakuza game or else.
Make us Yakuza games. I'm really loving this like Yakuza narrative we have going on right now.
I've been playing a lot of Yakuza 5 lately, and one of the things I've noticed is there are constantly Yakuza waiting around your home, waiting to pick a fight with you every time you go near.
Trying to say something.
And so this is probably what happened.
I'm telling you, it's the subliminal messages.
They're waiting around for Satomi to get home and to try to kick his ass. And this is probably what happened. They found it. Maybe Satomi rushed inside really quickly, and they just fired a few shots off and ran off. Who knows?
Hey, we heard Shinwa 3 is not out, so...
I jokingly put
something about that.
This was it actually says a year ago, but I guess it was like what, January? It was January, yeah. I wrote three live bullets, Shenmue 3 confirmed, and it was confirmed in June. So hey. But yeah, I wrote that one. I don't think there was an update. I didn't say anything a couple days after, so I don't know what happened if they followed up on that. Or what, but yeah, it was interesting because I don't think they, at least I didn't say anything that they, you know, any new information.
So our next story is pretty exciting. There was a new Sega Pluto prototype that landed on eBay on January 26th.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I mean, as you guys probably remember, Robert Vega was the guy who purchased the original Sega Pluto that we ended up finding out about a couple years ago. He bought it at a flea market for $1. That's just insane. He ended up trying to sell it several times, and it never ended up going through. So we probably should check back in with Robert, see what's going on with his Pluto. But anyway, another one ended up coming up on eBay, and this one was a a prototype. So unlike the other ones, this was just an empty shell. As you can, if you're watching the YouTube video, you can see here, it looks like it's just kind of like a plastic resin. And it probably was used for some trade shows or just something along those lines back in the day. The person who put it on eBay, her username was Sophie Millo, wrote, "My husband saved it from being thrown away while working at Sega. He thought it was super cool and rare and was ultimately given to him instead of being discarded." So they put it up for $10,000. Obviously it didn't sell, but let's go here.
Nobody's
gonna
pay.
Yeah, let's see if we can see this. Oh, they ended up lowering the price to $5,000 in the end.
That's still a lot for like a big piece of plastic, as much as it's a prototype.
$5,000 paperweight.
That's essentially
pretty much.
They ended up adding his work ID badge and some business cards. It says, "This is definitely the real deal and not altered in any way. It was found in the mail storage area of 650 Townsend in San Francisco and given him sometime between 99 and 2000. We appreciate all the discussions around this rare piece of history and hope we can find a good home soon." So what a lot of people were wondering about is if they ended up seeing the other Sega Pluto systems and just got it 3D printed and slapped on a Sega Pluto sticker, because it certainly looks like it could have been. It's there's no serial number, anything like that, that gives it any sort of identity other than just, you know, the fact that it's just a plastic case, essentially. Doesn't look like it sold. So that was the end of Sophie Millo's. Let's see what else she's been selling lately.
Nothing.
Yeah. She has a 286 points. Positive
feedback?
She sold a Sega Saturn Quake prototype.
Quake?
For $127. A Sega Saturn Rare Tempest prototype. So
for $42?
She's got her hands on... Whoa, what is this? Yeah. She just sold something for...
Shenmue
prototype. $2,500.
I'm trying to look closer and read that.
US full version with debug menus for $2,500.
Jesus.
So
it looks like more than just like getting stuff from a dude who worked at Sega.
Yeah, she's saying
maybe she had keys to a warehouse and starts doing stuff.
Number 18,
Sega Dreamcast Propeller Arena prototype unreleased for $579. Holy crap!
Yeah, but I don't think they would just throw random stuff like this in a warehouse. They would like keep it in the offices, if anything.
I don't know. Sega of America is really weird. Like, okay, we're firing people. Everybody get a box out of the warehouse and go away.
I don't know. She's selling quite a bit. Well, we can see a picture over here.
What's that game show where you like pick a warehouse or like a garage and then you like get whatever's inside it?
Storage Wars?
Storage Wars.
Like that. She just hit the jackpot and had like all this Sega merch.
I didn't even know you have like a profile page on eBay now. So it says, "My husband and I have been longtime eBay users. Video games and BMX bikes are our interests. He worked for Sega in San Francisco during the Dreamcast era, 1999 to 2003. He's still in the video game industry today, although he is fighting cancer now."
Oh, shit.
I don't know why it means, although he is fighting cancer. That's kind of a weird...
He's a trooper.
That took a weird turn.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that as the last.
Neither did I.
This just escalated.
Here's to the fight, Sophie Millo's husband. Keep on trucking.
I don't have anything to drink, but I have a Yankee candle. I'll light it for you.
I'm drinking some Sam Adams White Christmas.
Does it taste like peppermints?
I don't know. It says brewed with spices. So, and then also I'm going to be drinking some
double fist
scotch too. Yeah. And I got one more bottle where that came from, so it's going to be a long night.
Nice.
I'm drinking like weird fruit liquor.
Let's see here. Oh, we still have some stuff. I thought I was done So, but I'm not done yet. So we got a couple more for January. Let's see here.
Monster Boy.
That Monster Boy thing.
Yeah, so Monster Boy, up to this point in January, this is January 30th of this year, we had learned about this game. It initially started as a Kickstarter game called Flying Hamster 2 by, what is the game? Atelier. They're a French developer, I believe. And so they launched a Kickstarter campaign for this new game called Flying Hamster 2, and it was very much inspired by Wonder Boy and the Monster World series. Mm-hmm. And it was doing fairly well on Kickstarter. I was really excited about it. We covered it quite a bit on the website. I ended up adding pledging. Thank you. I lost that word. So I ended up pledging to the campaign. I was very excited about it. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the campaign ended, and they're like, well, we're going to have some big news here in the coming weeks. The big news was they found a publisher for the game. So it was very, very exciting. Fast forward several months, nothing, we didn't hear much of anything, and the big news came out that the game was now going to be dubbed Monster Boy and is going to be an official part of the Wonder Boy Monster World series. So that's big news for fans of the series out there. The publisher's FDG Entertainment. And what's more, they said in the announcement, they said, Monster Boy will be an all-new adventure, and as we closely work together with Ryuichi Nishizawa, he's the original creator of Monster World, it can be considered as an official part of the series. Since the trademark is owned by Sega, we had to pick a different name, of course. And they said, we're thrilled to announce that this beautiful project is no more just a Monster World clone, but a real new official part of the series. Once again, thanks to both our publisher, FDG Entertainment, and Mr. Nishizawa, who pushed the project, in the most incredible good direction. And so I want to say afterward, it was announced that, and I'm also brain farting, excuse me, who is the legendary Streets of Rage composer?
Yuzo Koshiro.
Thank you. He's also attached to this. This isn't a part of this particular news story, but I wanted to add that because I was very excited about that. The game was slated to be released at the end of this year, but it got pushed back until quarter one of next year. So we're hoping that the game is going to be released within the first quarter, but we still don't know. It's been delayed already once, but it's looking really good so far. There was just a new trailer released, I think, last week. Really good. It's going to be released for the PlayStation 4 and PC so far, and I don't know if any other platforms have been announced thus far. But I'm really excited, and from what they said, for those people like myself who pledged to the Kickstarter campaign, we're still going to get our free copy of the game. Even though they refunded us the money. So that's going to be interesting to see what happens with that.
My question is, what happened with Michiru Yamane? She's just not doing anything with it? As well as Yuzo Koshiro?
I don't know. I don't know who that is.
No, it says it in the article. That's why I'm asking. If my memory serves me correctly, that's one of the composers for Symphony of the Night. Mm-hmm.
That now. I don't know. I want to say that Yuzo Koshiro isn't doing all of the music in the game. He's just contributing a small portion of it.
I guess they're just like splitting it up.
Yeah, from what I understand. So the last piece of news in January, and then we'll move on to February, is Sega of Europe to see a limited number of redundancies. And this is January 30th, 2015.
Which was like the previous thing to a catastrophe that was yet to
right go. Yeah exactly this was like the first rumblings of the news of the incoming cuts in Sega's workforce. I guess up to this point we heard that Sega was going to be looking to downsize some of its North American headquarters and everything like that. So some of the Sega employees at Europe, SOE, ended up getting laid off. Of course, this ended up coming down the line. It affected really Sega all over the world. Sega of Japan, obviously Sega of America. A lot of the community management team ended up getting laid off. They moved headquarters from the longtime headquarters in San Francisco to then, where are they at now? I want to say, like, was it Anaheim?
No, Irvine.
Irvine, that's right. Thank you. I still don't know if we know if they're within the Atlas headquarters or if they're. I've heard that they're sharing some of the workspace with Atlas, but I don't know if that's how true that is.
Same cubicle?
Probably. All of Sega they share like a bathroom.
All Sega. All Sega is in a box in the warehouse.
They got one water cooler. They got one printer. And they only have one light phone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it could be
a single light bulb.
No switch to turn it on. No
fixture.
All right.
That's pretty long through Atlas.
Now let's go into February. Jason, you're gonna take February, buddy.
Yeah. From what? Well, the first thing we could talk about is the whole YouTube thing. Back around the second or the third, where
the fifth.
All right, I read the date wrong. Don't yell at me. Where YouTube was just going, where Sega was just going nuts on people with their YouTube videos. Prefer mostly the Shining Force videos that people have been posting. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember reading a lot about this and seeing a lot of people talking about it. I mean, from what it looks like, it was something with the e-license and constant ID claims from a Japanese company.
I don't think they even had an official affiliation with Sega either. That was the weird thing.
From what it looks like, no, it's just like its own thing. Like, has anybody even heard of this company, E-License?
I don't think up until this point anyone had heard of them.
No, I mean, that just... From what it looks like, they all got it figured out a couple months later, though.
Right. Sega ended up tweeting that E-License was acting independently, and they were looking to take necessary action to stop their claims on YouTube. So... that was good. But the thing is that as a YouTuber, obviously any strike against you is a big deal, especially with these copyright claims. And so when you have just a third-party company out there going through and, you know, just randomly assigning a copyright claims to people, that can certainly hurt your, you know, just your status with YouTube. I don't know if they retroactively went back and removed those copyright strikes against people's accounts or not, but this was a big deal to a lot of YouTubers. I know, you know, Johnny Millennium, the happy console gamer.
I was just about to mention that. Yeah,
he had several Johnny videos video about that, and I've been a longtime fan of his show. I think I've watched every single one of his videos from the very beginning. Big fan of his, but also just a lot of other YouTubers out there were affected by this. Even us, we had a few copyright claims because we had some old Shining Force videos. So back in the day when they were releasing like Shining Force Exa and Shining Force Neo. Yeah.
Why Shining Force 2? Specifically, though?
I don't know.
I don't even know. What
like,
was it like?
The Hedgehog's okay, but this isn't okay.
Like the Genesis Shining Forces, don't they even qualify at fair use with how old they are?
Bryce,
that's a good question. I don't know.
At least for like 1, 2, and Shining in the Darkness, but cheap. I could understand EXA and the newer ones.
Yep.
But that's weird.
Yeah, so.
And then also later in the month we had the creator of Condemned wanting the indie developer to make the third game in the franchise, or been thinking about the third game in the franchise.
This got me so excited.
Oh, yeah, because you love Condemned, don't you?
One of my favorite series of all time. I fucking love it.
Yeah, from what it looks like, Melissa Funder, former CEO, claims that not Sega or WB owns the franchise and was thinking about a third game. Even posted on his Facebook team about finding an indie development team.
So this was the interesting thing, though. I was surprised to find out that he owned the rights to Condemned, because I assumed that Sega had retained the rights to Condemned because they published the game, but Monolith was the one that developed it back then. So, you know, all these, you know, publishing deals probably are very different from game to game. But I know that to this day, you know, a lot of ones, you know, Sega does own the rights to these games when they publish them, like all the Platinum Games developed
series. Yeah, the Platinum stuff.
Yeah, you know, Vanquish, Bayonetta, and stuff. Sega owns the rights to those. But it looks like Monolith and Jace Hull owns the rights to this. Mm. And I don't think really anything came of this. I don't know what ended up happening, but we hadn't really heard anything more about that. I should hit him back up again to see what happened. So Jace Hull, he ended up buying Twin Galaxies, if you guys are familiar with the website.
High there. Score gaming thing?
Yes, exactly. So they ended up kind of just going out of business. I forget, who's the old dude that ran Twin Galaxies? William H. Macy, right?
Yeah, that's the referee, that guy.
I mean... but so he ended up losing Twin Galaxies, and...
Jason, like in a bet?
I don't know, maybe. Maybe he's just... It was like a Donkey Kong bet, and he lost it. But Jace Hull ended up buying it, and so I think that's kind of what Jace Hull's doing, and his idea is to try to make that kind of like a big Hall of Fame, a big... kind of thing where they do like annual awards and stuff like that. So all the, you know, more power to him on that endeavor.
Yeah, one day you'll get your Condemned 3, Chris.
Oh, God, I hope. Just the very fact that it's now backwards compatible, the original Condemned is now backwards compatible on the Xbox One, has gotten me excited. I have it loaded up on my Xbox One right now, as a matter of fact. So.
Nice. Well, the next thing that happened in the year is we had a little bit of money loss in our favorite company to speak of.
A little money loss.
I feel like that's going to be an ongoing trend throughout the year.
For the rest of the year.
Yeah. It's not like it lost a quarter and found it under the carpet.
It looked like
there's Marson again with this bad news.
Go ahead, Marson. You want to take the bad news?
Oh, God. I mean, they lost a lot of money, like, you know, so if you want to get the long, you know, the short of it, it's they lost a lot of money. They had to restructure the company and lost 300 jobs in the process. They're going to divide it into three divisions. So they divided it into Sega Holdings, Sega Interactive, and then Sega Live Creation.
Pachinko Yakuza payment.
Pachinko Yakuza slots. I mean, basically, it wasn't good. I don't think the people want to hear too many numbers, but I mean, when it came to Sonic Boom for the Wii U and 3DS, they only managed to sell 490,000 units combined. So that's the lowest in the franchise's history.
That still sounds like a lot to me.
But Sonic Boom for the Wii U and the 3DS together. You know?
I know.
So that's still pretty bad, because, I mean, it's two separate titles, and I think they were different games, right? It's not like Rise of Lyric was the same as...
No, they were totally separate.
Shattered Glass or some shit. But
Shattered Sonic History.
Shattered Profits. Sonic Boom Shattered Profits. But it's basically, you know, it was a bad year. So I mean, it wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you guys think?
Is 125
mil. Is it the, you know, the string of bad, you know, titles that were released? Why do you think they're losing so much money?
It was a combination of everything, you know, bad administration, doing bad games, releasing them before they were ready. Like having bad publicity, like there are people being too silent about too many things, taking bad decisions, like deciding to go for Project Eva instead of Phantasy Star Online 2, like stuff like that. You know, like when everything is done bad from the very beginning, it ends up bad. That's what happened. And yeah, they had many money at stake. And I think one of the things that really hit them bad was, like, that bad deal with Gearbox. Like, they really lost a ton of money. Because I think without making that deal, they could still have something to back up Sonic Boom or stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they really tried to push that Miku thing back then.
And I think this probably extends, though, to their deal with Nintendo, doesn't it? I mean, this was for all of that 2015, so it extended back, you know, previously into 2014. And so you're looking at that deal that Sega made with Nintendo to bring, you know, three exclusive Sonic games. And obviously those games just didn't perform the way they wanted them to. I think when Sega made that deal, that was obviously coming off Nintendo's, you know, Wii. And it's just ginormous, you know, numbers that it sold. So I think going into that deal, Sega thought...
To be fair, that deal was made when Sega needed money. So it was from going bad to going worse.
Right, but what I'm saying is that Sega made that deal thinking that the Wii U is probably going to perform, you know, at least on par with what the Wii did, and that there was going to be, you know, millions and millions of units in people's homes when these games released, and there was just a fraction of those Wii U's that, you know, were, you know, in people's homes at that point in time in its life compared to the Wii when it was released. So there was just a very small fraction of the amount of people that, you know, had Wii U's and that would buy these games, and I think that certainly contributed to some of that. And I think, I'm pretty sure this happened all within this fiscal year, so.
Yeah.
I think it was like 2 months ago where they said that the Wii U just surpassed the Dreamcast sales. It was like around October. I'm like, holy fuck, are you serious?
Nintendo's the Wii U kind of fell on its face at the start when you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, call it the Wii U, people assumed it was like an added peripheral to the Wii, and some people are under the assumption that, you know, oh, everyone thinks like me, but there's a lot of parents who have no idea what the hell a Wii is, or, you know, Wii U, they're going to think it's like, what is that, some kind of controller or something?
And then they're Nintendo.
That's what it was. Yeah. So... That was a bad naming decision. Whoever was marketing that shit, fired.
It is also to say that this restructure was also a consequence of how Sega was operating. Like, Sega of Japan was over there, America was doing their thing, Europe also doing their thing. Like, it was
and I don't know if there was any communication. There wasn't any synergy, you know what I mean? Like, the three working together, I felt like everyone was in their separate, you know, region, and everyone worried about their own thing. Like, games that come out in Japan don't reach Europe or North America, and then Sonic Boom is an American thing. You know, it's just all everywhere. And I thought, even in the 90s, I thought they were a little bit more better structure. With communication and structure, so.
I mean, now it's just, at least back then, it was really convoluted because everybody had their own, like, releases that they stuck to.
Right.
Yeah, it was chaotic.
Yeah.
Knuckles, I mean, this is chaotic. A pretty good segue into...
Knuckles
Chaotix?
Okay. I'm going to stop.
That's what it was.
No? There was Knuckles Chaotix. It was the 32X. Yeah, I mean, this seems like a pretty good segue to our next article.
Speaking of 32X, Kalinske, right? He was around that time. That's a good segue.
Yeah, it really is. And how he was talking about Sega making bad decisions for the past 20 years.
Oh, hey, that's the segue. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean,
shut up now.
Do you guys have any opinions on this?
He's right.
So basically, I mean, this was on, you know, after all of this, you know, bad news had been coming out, and then he came out and started discussing this. I want to say he was, this was after or when he was at DICE. He had a panel that he presented at DICE, and he did an interview with GameIndustry.biz. And talking about just kind of the litany of bad decisions that Sega has made dating back 20 years ago, essentially when he kind of left the company. He said that...
A little bit of history, before he left, right?
Right. He said it wasn't inevitable. It could have been avoided if they had made the right decisions going back literally 20 years ago, but they have seemed to have made wrong decisions for 20 years. one of the key reasons why I left Sega is when we had the opportunity to work with Sony, when Olaf Olafsson and I had agreed we were going to do one platform, share the development cost, share the profitable loss for a couple years, but each benefit from the software we could bring to the platform. Of course, in those days, we were much better at software than they were, so I saw this as a huge win. We went to Sony, and they agreed. Great idea. Whether we called it Sega Sony or Sony Sega, who cared? We go to Sega, and the board turned it down, which I thought was a stupid decision ever made in the history of business. And from that point on, that moment on, I didn't feel they were capable of making the correct decisions in Japan any longer, which is a sick burn right there.
Yeah, it really is.
So he goes on just to talk about how Sega kept fucking things up for a long time after that.
And pretty much how he didn't want Sega to pull Atari, but, you know, from what it looks like.
Yeah, so...
Pico. Anybody remember the Pico?
No.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
The Pico.
Pico-chu?
But could you imagine, though, what the game industry would be like today if this deal would have went through? I mean, this literally, dating back to that time, this would have changed everything if Sega and Sony entered an agreement. And, I mean, I think to this day, if that would have went through, Sega would still be in the hardware business.
Not only that, it would have been like the actual leader because, you know, with Sega's creativity and Sony's global distribution, which was a thing that Sega had a problem with all its entire existence, like distribution was a big deal that Sega had to go through. You know, having money and actual distribution and creativity with that, you know, Sega would have been the top.
Yeah, the combination. Well, so the biggest
thing and one of the things that Sega always, you know, was kind of fighting, and it was just that it wasn't the company that Nintendo was. It wasn't the company that Sony or Microsoft was. They didn't have all these other revenue sources coming in, which is why they eventually merged with Sammy to help offset some of that, and why you see Sega of today, they have all these different other business strategies and things like that, whereas back then, they were strictly a video game company. They made home consoles, they made home software, they made arcade games. And that, essentially, at that point in time, was pretty much it. I mean, they also did license deals, they did toys and things like that. But for the most part, it was a very closed and you know, segmented system of product. Well, you know, Sony came in with a much bigger company and much bigger profits that they were making at the time. They could help absorb a lot of those costs and a lot of the money that they'd be losing in the initial push for that, you know, that system when they launched it. Because, I mean, as a lot of people know, when companies launch a new console, they lose money for a couple of years until, you know, development costs get to the point where they're able to make profit on each console and they're able to turn a profit. So long term, after the first couple of years, they're able to turn a profit, which is one of the problems with the Dreamcast. Sega wasn't able to get over that hump to where they were able to start really turning a profit and making money back, which is why they had to quickly change focus from the Dreamcast and go into, you know, software to try to recoup some of that money to just to keep them in business. Well, you know, if Sony were to have done this, or if Sega were to do this with Sony, I think it definitely would have turned out to be a much different company today. And I think they might have still been in business today. Who knows? I mean, they might have ended up merging, and we'd see a Sega Sony or a Sony Sega.
We'd be all playing games on our Dream Stations and our
our
Play Gears.
Actually, Sega had cool, two though. Chances, you know, the one with Sony and the other one with Bandai, and none of them happened.
No.
Well, because Sony pretty much said, fuck you, because they went to Nintendo, because they wanted to make a CD peripheral with Nintendo, and if you guys read about that prototype that was released, or that was found recently about it, like a Nintendo PlayStation, so I guess Nintendo said no, Sega said no, so they said fuck you to both, and they made the PlayStation.
Yeah,
and now they're the number one video game company.
Park that ignited.
Yep, figures.
And they're kicking everybody's ass today.
Yep,
that's what you get.
That happens. That's how the console wars went.
Yep.
And then our last article for the month is a fairly recent release. This is our info when Rodeo the Sky Soldier first was going to get its Western release.
This is exciting news. Yeah, because I mean, at this point in time, we didn't know if Rodeo was going to be released in the West, so this was big news, right?
This is before the delays, before the dark times.
I would kind of expect it to be released by NIS when you sit and think about it. I mean, out of all publishers.
Yeah, that was one of the ones we were kind of talking about. We're like, okay, NIS or Atlas, one of these companies has to pick this up, you know what I mean?
I mean...
Yeah. I think we even held out hope that Sega might even
NIS America Idea Factory... Idea Factory and Atlas are the ones who always rescue all these titles.
There's always D3
too.
Japanese I don't know
titles.
What they bring anymore. D3 publisher.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we finally got our announcement on that, and then it came out recently, and reviewers hated it.
I have it. I still haven't been able to really play it.
It came out in Japan like two days before my birthday, so I guess that's cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't really experimented with Rodea yet. I want to.
But actually, all that backlash was Kadokawa's fault because they actually did a bad port, and actually the original release is pretty nice, which is the Wii version.
Yeah, because the Wii version is the best one.
Wii version first, and it just made me remember how much I hated playing on the Wii. because you've got to do that stupid nunchuck controller. I hate it. I was just like, man.
Now, do you just hate it because of the nunchuck controller, or do they try to force like motion controls and waggling your hands like an asset?
I didn't get to the point where I'm having to waggle anything, but I'm having to like point the Wiimote at, you know, like just at some thing in the distance and press the Z button, press the A button, and all this other bullshit, which... I just feel like it would just be way better if I had a regular controller. You know what I mean? Because the original Knights didn't need, you know, some fancy motion controls or anything else to be amazing. That awesome Saturn 3D pad was fucking amazing. That was one of my all-time favorite controllers for everything. And that just proved to me that you don't need this, you know, silly gimmicky motion controls to be able to create a smooth, nice feeling aerial, you know, flying game. And this, and Rodea is very similar in feel to Knights. One of the things I didn't really like about it, though, is that you don't fly continuously in you know, through the air. You're constantly having, if you're going, you have to continue targeting areas, you know, in the horizon to try to, like, kind of zoom your character to. Whereas
so
in
you gotta like tap and dash and tap and dash.
Yeah, and it's very frustrating, especially given the finicky controls of the Wii. You know what I mean? It's not that great of a controller. It's not that great of a motion controlling system.
Now can you use a pro controller, or are you forced to play remote nunchuck?
That's a good question. I want to say that you have to play with the motion controls, but don't quote me on that. I'm not sure.
Nope, I'm gonna quote you on it. You ruined Rodeo for me, Chris. Why?
They're probably going to get some sort of cease and desist.
Why you did you do this to me?
Yeah, I just wanted to enjoy Rodeo.
Well, right.
Who knows? I mean, this game might end up being one of the ones that is going to end up being rare on the Wii U at a later date.
To be honest, most of these like weird Japanese games that get brought over to America by like NIS and Idea Factory and Atlus tend to go rarer after their initial release. Like some people try to go nuts and find the collector's editions, they're never able to be found. Or even the standard editions are really hard to find because nobody really buys them in stores. And then like a couple months later when you want to buy them, you just can't find them anymore and you have to go on Amazon and pay like $80.
All right, and now it's my favorite Martin's turn.
Oh, man. Who remembers?
He finally used
Joe
it.
Montana. Joe Montana football. So basically, it's been over 20 years since we've seen Joe Montana football, Graceless Greens, and the Rumblings began in July, and it started with an image with the hashtag, "You've waited long enough," and hashtag JoeMontanaFootball16. But more info was going to come, suggesting that it was a mobile title using Unreal Engine. So basically, it didn't come out this year. It still is scheduled to be released next year, and it is going to be a mobile title. I mean, what else can you say? Have you guys played Joe Montana Football before?
Oh, back in the day, Joe Montana Sports Talk Football was one of the most revolutionary games during the 16-bit era, because that was the game that ushered in real commentary when playing a game. Because back then, up to that point, Madden didn't have that. And that was one of the biggest selling points of Joe Montana Sports Talk, was that, hey, you played the game and there was real commentary based on what was happening in the game. And yeah. I remember playing it as a kid. We loved it because of that. It added in the realism. It was one of those games that you play as a kid and be like, it feels like real life. You know, it was one of those moments that you had. And that was a big thing. And more so than anything, that was like the biggest selling point. But also the gameplay in those old Joe Montana Sports Talk games was really good. It was a good game. It was a good series. It's sad to see it kind of go away. But I'm going to click on this Montana 16 hashtag and just see what happens. Also, I do love the fact the sick burn that they used was a hashtag more than a roster update, which was pretty good. So let's see if Montana 16 brings up anything new.
We really need like different football games. I would love to have another football game besides John Madden.
Madden monopolized it, man.
So it's like
they monopolized all the sports.
Yeah,
see, so some like. Some weird Christmas music.
It's some Montana state. Yeah. Like it's just tweets from a bunch of people from
Here's
Montana.
Here's a YouTube video. Joe Montana Football mobile screen mirroring options. Wait, did this game didn't get released, did it?
I don't think so.
No way. Google.
I'm pretty sure it's still waiting to be released.
That's what I thought.
You
but this guy,
what year was it? 2016?
We're looking at. Oh, it's just this guy talking.
And talking about Joe Montana football.
Or he's using it as a way for you to click on his video and has nothing to do with it.
You son of a bitch.
That's what it is.
Got me.
2015.
He button hooked me.
Oh, wait, no, that's. Wait, June 17th.
So June 17th, Joe Montana confirmed PC mobile.
Yeah, but that's about it.
Huh.
From what it looks like, they're going to release it on iOS, and then however good it does on phones, then they'll do it on PC, and then maybe a console port afterwards.
The biggest thing, it doesn't look like... So it's showing a little bit of prototype footage. From here, it doesn't look like there is any sort of... NFL license on it. It looks like it's fake teams.
I'd believe it. So I mean, you can't do it because of Madden.
Yep. Madden owns it, so they won't be able to.
I still think the only way you're going to get an unlicensed football game that's going to sell well is if you have. I think the Mutant League games will be good because you don't need the NFL license for that. And Blitz. That's what I'm gonna say. You have to have an arcade style game to sell a football game. It cannot be any sort of simulation type game.
They did bring Blitz back. That I'm shocked about, but
the one by Midway?
Yeah.
Was it made by Midway?
Yeah, it was made by Midway.
Now NetherRealm Studios.
Well, Warner Brothers Video Games Incorporated.
Yeah.
And movies.
Yeah. So
this is actually, I think Copy's gonna have to talk us through. But go ahead.
This is the Game Freak, right? Or whatever
yes.
it is called?
Retro Freak.
Yes.
Retro Freak. I was close.
So basically, it's a console that was announced, and it'll play just about every single cartridge made during the 16-bit era. So the
and
list
8-bit
of cartridges. Yes, and 8-bits. So it may include things like the Game Boy and the Color, the Advance, the Mega Drive, The Genesis, which is the same thing, just two different countries. The PC Engine, TurboGrafx, Famicom, Super Famicom.
TurboGrafx, that's a weird one.
TurboGrafx. I mean, TurboGrafx
was an update for the TurboGrafx 16 and PC Engine in Japan, and only six games were released for that console. So
the only reason to own that would be 1941, and that's it.
Yeah, actually. And basically, this console is really, really cool. Like, I already did a review on the site. If anyone listening to the show wants to read it, it's over there. It's more specific. But the thing is that this little device solves a lot of problems on displaying your old cartridge games on a on an actual flat television, modern one. And it is pretty functional, and what I like about this is, like, it's affordable and does a lot of things. And it is actually, once you guys read the review, you will notice that it is actually better than the retro currently is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all these weird retro consoles are just, like, going nuts lately.
Well, the thing is that besides all of those, this one works pretty well. Like, it performs really well. It has a really nice operating system. You know, like, has a lot of filters that really improve the gaming experience compared to all of those emulation consoles out there. For example, the thing with this is, I think Raham did a review for the site talking about the AT Games consoles, the ones that are
the Genesis
really cheap
ones.
Those ones are really, really bad. I mean, they really work bad, they really display bad, they have bad response, and this one is not. This one has a really tight control, has really nice filters.
I like it tight.
It really has nice performance and display for your games.
Tight
and actually,
performance.
It made
you
a
should
lot
make
of,
Sega's ads, Chris. Make it crazy again.
To both of you.
The audio is pretty nice, too, so...
The
body.
See, the thing that always gets me about these retro, like, we're going to remake a console, but it's not going to be an official console, is always the sound emulation. The sound emulation is always off, and that's just one of the most aggravating things about it, and the compatibility. Like,
well,
the ones
thing
that
is,
don't play
Castlevania. It cannot be done another way. It cannot be done another way because of the hardware limitations at that time. For example, the first thing that will stop you from actually doing actual hardware for that is the SCAN lines, because that thing sent like a line for each part of the display, which was done exactly for CRTVs. And there's no way you can do that now without emulation. So it is kind of the things. You cannot go without emulation for this type of new releases. Even in the new HD remaster ports, or even in the Sega 3D Classics, you have to go through emulations and
to go
over the SCAN lines.
I mean, there was some decent ones. The only one half-assed like consoles. That's usually what I refer to them as. The only one I really had was a Yobo FC, and that was just a horrible experience. It was like a.
That's the thing that actually, you know, sold me the thing, that it actually makes really great emulation, and the other part is it has a PC Engine TurboGrafx 16.
Yeah, that I'm shocked about the TurboGrafx, though. I know we're, like, ranting this on forever, but I'm really shocked about the TurboGrafx emulation.
It's 16 we're sorry. Games.
Yeah, that 5 games, you really need your Darius Alpha and your Ghouls and Ghosts.
How much did that even cost the console itself or the update or whatever the fuck?
TurboGrafx?
Yeah.
Or the Retro Freak? TurboGrafx?
No, TurboGrafx.
I want to say around 400, 500. They were really expensive.
Right.
It was limited. The console itself was only limited to playing TurboGrafx games, I believe. And there was only about like five or six games. Most of them were shooters. And then two Capcom ports.
Actually, all of them are shooters.
Well, Ghouls and Ghosts isn't really a shooter. I mean, 1941 and Darius is, but...
But this thing saves you all that money. That's what is, like, the plus.
Yeah, that's good. You don't have to buy the TurboGrafx. I mean, the only reason I would buy a TurboGrafx is 1941, so that's about it.
And it's a pretty nice game, yeah.
Oh, that port is so good.
All right, so moving on. So this was an interesting period in our month. We were talking about Chris was talking to Stephen Frost about Sonic Boom. I think Chris, you might want to discuss this a bit more. But basically, you guys talked about the game. You talked a bit about his own history. There were a couple of websites that sort of took his quotes out of context. And I kind of want you to talk about it a little bit, and also maybe if you followed up with him since then, if he's talked to you after those websites were publishing those quotes.
Yeah, I felt terrible following this because this was I talked to him before we went on and before he came on the podcast. I talked to him. I'm like, hey, you know, one of the things that we definitely want to talk about is Sonic Boom. You know, it's kind of like the elephant in the room. This was, you know, after the game had released. Obviously, it met with, you know, pretty poor reviews, and you know, it is kind of just a laughing stock, you could say, within, you know, the video game industry up at that point. And so I'm like, hey, you know, I want to talk about Sonic Boom, but it's going to be one of the many things that, you know, we talk about, you know, throughout the podcast. And it really was. It wasn't something that we solely focused on. But that was the thing that everyone picked up on. And he
especially
had
especially Polygon. Those masters. Yeah.
And hey, so, they listen to our podcast. Yay!
Right.
the only time they listen to our podcast has to be exactly that, for exactly Sonic, those Sonic quotes. Yeah.
And so I think the things that people took out of this, which they took out of context, was they thought that he was trying to say that the Sonic Boom games were good and that they were a success, which is not really what he said. He was trying to say that there was some successes that came out of Sonic Boom. One of them being the merchandising, which did really, really well, and the cartoon. Merchandising, you know, he said that they sold really well. They were sold out of a lot of stores, and their retail partners, particularly Toys R Us, were happy, very happy with the way the toys were doing. They were happy the fact that there was a different looking, there were a different variety of Sonic toys that they could sell in addition to the other Sonic toys they could sell. And really, that's one of the biggest reasons why they looked at changing the Sonic characters cosmetically is because, hey, you know, we gotta, you know, you gotta change that stuff up if you want to sell different toys. Go back to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle days. When the cartoon first came out, when the first line of figures came out, you had the very basic set. You had the turtles, you had Shredder, you had Casey. You know, I don't even know if you had Casey Jones in the first run. Splinter, and I think April O'Neil, Rock City Bebop, maybe.
Pizza.
And then you started seeing all these variations of the turtles. You had them in like Hawaiian shirts. You had them like in all these other crazy things.
You had the ripoff turtles, the Hawaiian frogs or whatever. I remember that.
Yeah, no, but you even had Hawaiian frogs. Legit turtle figures that would wear like Hawaiian clothes. They were basically what it was their disguise when they would go out into public. Yeah. They would wear all these like silly clothes and things like that. You just have all these different things. The reason being is that they wanted to continue to sell these kids who were fans of the turtles. They wanted to keep selling more figures, so they would change the look of them. This is the exact same thing that Sega was doing, and this is the thing that commercial retailers have been doing for years. They have always done this thing. So this is what Sega was doing with Sonic Boom. They were giving a fresh look at Sonic Boom to sell you different Sonic merchandise. And this is one of the things that Stephen Frost was saying that was a success. He wasn't saying that the Sonic Boom games were necessarily a success, but going more towards that, he did say that there were some things that they did well when developing the game. He also pointed out that there were a lot of, you know, difficulties that they had. There were a lot of hurdles they had. They had a very limited time frame to basically create a Sonic game from scratch, whereas Sonic Team has got the Sonic formula down pat. They've been making these games for decades. They know, you know, how to make a Sonic game. They have all of that, you know, that formula, that tried and true formula, done
and
well.
That actually wasn't Stephen Frost's fault. It was Sega's fault because those guys made the deal.
Right.
And those guys decided to release the game in that really short time frame.
So, you know, going back, I felt very bad for the Fallout. So what I ended up doing is I spent an entire day just transcribing the entire interview, and this is what we're looking at now on the website if you're watching the video, is the full transcript. Because I wanted just to set the record straight and be like, look, this is what he actually said. I want to get this out there. And I did feel bad about it. I don't think Steve and I have really talked about it since then. We're friends on Facebook. We talk to each other. You know, we comment on each other's posts and everything like that.
So he doesn't hate you.
I hope not.
No, at least he doesn't hate us.
So from what it seems
like... He doesn't hate us. But the thing is that it wasn't really Chris' fault. I mean, he knows that Chris did the interview in a certain way. I mean, it was actually this guy, Sonic Stadiums and... Polygon, the ones that really took the worst out of something that was completely out of context.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, pretty much, it was just they made Sonic Boom, it got outsourced.
You turned into a girl with big boobs. Where'd your camera go?
I had to shut off my camera for a minute. I had to go put my phone on my charger. That's a Valkyrie from Valkyrie no Densetsu.
Oh.
I kind of like that picture better.
Oh yeah, I know you love me when I dress like a Valkyrie for you. So pretty much it just got outsourced into like a third party company and then just turned into like a shitstorm from there basically.
Right. And you know what though, like looking forward, they were under a very difficult time crunch to get this game out because they had to get it within the time frame of the release of the animated TV show.
Nintendo was obligating them to do.
Right, and so they were under a really, really difficult situation when they undertook this game. And this is one of the reasons why I'm actually looking forward, believe it or not, to the next Sonic Boom game on the 3DS, because they're not under these same restrictions. They have the time. They've already delayed the game once, so they have extra time to develop this game and get it right. I think Sega of America is very... very adamant that they get it right this time because they want Sonic Boom to be a good franchise that Sega of America controls, that they are able to continue to develop, that it's a spin-off series within the Sonic franchise, and that it's going to be able to be a continuing franchise that goes into the future. I don't think that they want this to be a one-off or two-off game, and then it's done after that. This is... You know, they want this to be a lasting franchise that they can build upon, and I think you can see that in the fact that the way they've committed to the animated TV show, I think they've already been greenlit for a second season. This is going to be very good for the Sonic Boom series, and I really hope that they take the kind of the formula, the humor, the style of writing, the voice acting, all of that, that was done in the animated TV show and try to apply that to the game. Because if they can capture that, I think that they're going to actually have a very good game on their hands. At least, maybe not from the gameplay standpoint. I haven't seen really the game in action from that. But just if they can capture the animated TV show in video game form, they'll have good writing, they'll have funny and compelling voice acting, which has been one of the best things about the Sonic Boom animated TV show. And if they can just build upon the gameplay and tighten up some of the deficiencies of the 3DS version, I think Sonic Boom Fire and Ice will be a solid title.
It looks like a really good game, to be completely honest.
I enjoy the cartoon.
I love the cartoon. I think it's
funny.
So
I need to catch myself up on that. I heard it was really good.
Happy, my man. It's over to you, buddy.
Okay, so the next one is, let's see.
We're in March.
Something we're all really hating.
April. Okay.
April, thank you.
Project Cross Zone, Brave New World, gets in development for 3DS. So everybody got hyped up for this game, which was looking pretty, pretty amazing. Most of the people who bought the first one didn't like much the gameplay system, but really loved the crossover thing. And so everybody got excited for this game. It was announced in April for a release this year in Japan. And we didn't know where the release date was going to be for the West, but you know, the release for the West was announced by this time. Any thoughts on this one?
I'm excited because I've never played one, and then when it comes out, I'm totally going to buy it because it has all these characters. So.
Yeah, I mean, Project Cross Zone, the first game, I'm having a lot of fun with it. I don't think I haven't finished it yet. I don't think I'm anywhere close to finishing it. From what I'm told, it's a really long game. But by the time Project Cross Zone 2 comes out, it looks very promising, considering there's characters from Yakuza, Axel from Streets of Rage is in it.
And Ryo Hazuki.
Yeah, Ryo Hazuki's in there. They really, like, expanded the Sega universe. And the Japanese version is out already, isn't it?
Yeah. It was out in October.
And you guys are going to love the OST, I can tell you that right now.
I think if the first game was a love letter to old school video game fans, Project Cross Zone 2 is an orgy for old school video game fans. Because there are just so many classic characters that are making an appearance in playable in this game from, you know, Capcom, Bandai, Sega.
Fan favorites.
My profile picture, for example, Valkyrie's in Project Cross Zone. But
this is definitely on top of my list. Like you, Marcin, I've never played the original game.
I played the first.
But this one is, man, it is on my short list of games that I'm looking forward to.
You have to find your 3DS, though.
Oh, shit, that's right. The one good thing, though, is I've got like 3 or 4 2DSs in my household.
All right, you got
it. Worst case scenario, I'll just play my kids. And if they don't like it, I'll punch them.
Child abuse.
It's just a little bit.
Just like a little bit.
I want to play Project Cross Zone, smack.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But yeah, this looks like it's going to be one of the really hype releases out of what Sega's coming out with. I mean, the first one's really good so far. I mean, with all the fan service there is, I mean, even going as far as like Dynamite Deca and Fighting Vipers and like the earlier Saturn titles, and even going as far as having like an entire chapter of the game based on Game Ground.
And actually, looking at the sales figures the game had in Japan, it really sold pretty well.
Yeah, Japan, it really went big in Japan. America kind of went under the radar for a little bit until people started like playing it and noticing it was a good game. The only complaint I've really heard so far about it is that it's just too long.
Who complains about that? Who complains about that?
There's so much gameplay. It fucking sucks.
No, I mean, it gets repetitive after a while because you know how all the battles are going to go. I mean, the battle system is good. I can say that, but it's just the same thing usually. It's either defeat this amount of enemies or walk to this part of the map and talk to this person and do this select thing, and then usually it just gets very repetitive.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's
an RPG. You're expected to repeat a lot of things.
Yeah. It's expected, but you'd expect it to change it up. Like, some of the boss battles later in the game or some of the enemies later in the game, if you know what you're doing and if you have your characters level enough, you could just pretty much beat anything. And this is even before New Game Plus, if there even is a New Game Plus. It just seems very streamlined. Otherwise, it's a really good game.
Okay.
And moving you guys on. Have no more boobs.
Okay, moving to the next piece of news is Sega's restructure plans are now in effect. As we heard in the previous month, you know, all these big restructure plans came in effect until this month, and actually Sega was like going under the radar because of this, but all of these changes were effective, and it actually made Sega, through the rest of the months, work better than they actually do, you know. Sum things up, there was this big route that was called Sega Holdings, and then Sega Holdings controlled the rest of the Sega divisions. Like, Sega Games became a thing, a redundant name it is, and it also, between Sega Games was the interactive part, it was the arcade part, and it was like the home console business part and the mobile part. And there was also this Sega Live Creation, which was more focused for entertainment, which has TMS and all these other things. And there's this Sega Interactive, which is the one that has the arcade machines business. And that's so pretty much...
So they pretty much just spread everything out to, like, balance out their divisions from what it sounds
mostly,
like.
Mostly those changes was for not affecting financially the other, because on the previous structure, all of these parts were dependent on Sega. So if Sega failed the part of the games, then the other ones were failing too in financial terms. So this way they are isolating every division so that they don't get polluted by what Sega can do bad.
Yeah.
What is Index doing these days?
Which one?
Index. Because that was the company that Sega bought to be essentially to get Atlus.
Okay. Earlier, the previous month, we had to report those news, which was basically Sega separated Atlus from Index. So Atlus is now under Sega Games Division. And right. Index became an independent company. And just what they did, it was like, okay, Index, you're not useful anymore to us. We're going to sell you. And they sold Index.
They sold Index?
Yeah. Index doesn't belong
but
to
what
Sega
did they
anymore.
Do during that time frame? Like, did they produce anything? What?
Well, Index was kind of a weird company. It made, like... different things like animation and like holdings
toilet
and stuff like
covers.
That. And no, they made also like banking and financial stuff. So basically,
they made business decisions more or less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're the ones responsible for those shitty default checks you get from your bank.
Motherfuckers.
I know where to send my hate mail now.
Basically, Sega was like, okay, we don't need you anymore, so screw you. And they sold it. Which was pretty well. Yeah. Like, they only got the part that they needed, which was Atlus.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when you marry a really hot chick, but she's got a son that you really don't like. And you keep the woman, but you, like, ship off the kid to his dad. It's like, his dad lives in Florida. Like, keeping her mom. That's pretty much what Sega did.
Are you trying to tell us something, Chris?
Yeah. Chris is trying to subliminal message. Especially with that Yakuza 0 thumbnail popping up.
That, but.
Okay. Next piece of news is Sonic, 3D Sonic 2, 3D Streets of Rage 2, and 3D Gunstar Heroes joined the Sega 3D Classics. You know, it was really nice for everyone in the West to finally get these games that they were like really asking Sega to bring over. And this was like the time when they got announced, like really close to the E3. And it was like a relief for everyone. Like, oh, this is finally happening. 3D Gunstar Heroes did pretty, pretty well from this batch.
I believe Streets of Rage did good too.
Did good too, but the one that really outstanded the most was 3D Gunstar Heroes. We know that it really sold amazingly well. Like, everybody was talking about it. It was a trending topic.
I would have expected them to port at least one treasure game, whether it be Gunstar Heroes or, what was the other one, Alien Soldier, I think it was? Was that the other treasure game?
Dynamite Heady.
Oh yeah, Dynamite Heady was the other one.
Yeah.
There was like the only three of them besides McDonald's.
I got some Dynamite
McDonald's
Heady.
And...
Yeah.
My birthday Dynamite Eddie. Once a year.
Does that involve a stick of dynamite? To keep it exciting?
Right down the urethra.
Jesus.
Oh, we're just going all out.
That's what those pills are for, aren't they? Yeah.
Chris is taking them there Viagra.
I'm started on the Johnny Walker now, fellas. I'm sorry. I know we're only into April, but it's only downhill from here for me.
I might just have to go grab another beverage at this point.
And so what did that happen? What's you guys' opinion?
You know what? These games were really good. I was very excited that Sega came out with these new like Genesis line of games.
The 3D classics in general, or just the Genesis ones?
Well, I'm saying I love the 3D classics. I've talked about them at length, but I was just very happy to see that they came out with these. They moved away from some of the old arcade games and went into some of the Genesis games because the Streets of Rage. One of my all-time favorite series ever, and especially in my very, very short list of favorite Sega series of all time. I just love those games. I love they're games that I can play with my kids, and we play them all the time. We'll just be sitting around. We're bored, and I talk to my daughter. I'm like, "Hey, you want to play some Streets of Rage?" And she's like, "Sure." And we'll sit down and, we'll pop it in the Genesis and we'll play some Streets of Rage 2 for, 30 minutes to 45 minutes. And we love it. And I actually ended up playing Streets of Rage 2 on the 3D Classics version with both my kids. We all have 3DSs or 2DSs in this household. All of my kids, we all have one. And so I was able to play it with my kids. We had a blast with it. I was really it was so nice to see Streets of Rage, not necessarily remastered, but being able to see it in really good detail instead of just kind of like the blurriness that you see playing the Genesis version, on like a CRT TV. Seeing it on the 3DS screen, even though it's not one of the most high-resolution small screens you can get, it still just looks very, very good on that screen, and I can't say enough good things about it. Just the things that... oh, God, what is the company that developed it? Why am I forgetting
M2.
It? Thank you very much. M2, man, those guys, they are like rock stars in handling the 3D classics. They just do so much good stuff. They go back and meticulously, re-present these games in 3D. And not only just that, but all the bonus content that you get, all the extra options and everything else that you get with it just makes
like the credit sequences and all that.
Yeah, I mean, it makes all of these games, if you're a 3DS or 2DS owner, it's just a no-brainer. Even if you own a 2DS and can't get the 3D, features in it, it's still a buy. It's a must-buy for those systems. They're just all so, so well done.
I always had, like, a weird, like, suspicion after the Thunderblade, like, credit sequence, how they show, like, Alien Storm and Golden Axe. I mean, that could be a thing at some point. I'm not saying anything, but it could be a thing, because Golden Axe is the one Genesis game that they're missing.
And actually, what was cool about this batch is that actually the West had some input on asking these titles, so they get like this kind of treatment. So it was nice, and they really did well, and better than actually the first batch. So let's go to the next piece of news. So there was this spreading rumors in the last part of the month that Sega might not be attending at E3 with a booth. And everybody was like, okay, will Sega confirm it or deny it? So this happened at the end of the month because of the whole restructure thing, the whole financial debacle, and pretty much that was the uncertain thing that happened at the end of the month.
Them just not having a booth.
Well, do you think they'll have a booth next year?
Well, the thing is the reason why they said they were not going to be at E3 is because they were in a transition. They said that they just couldn't properly man a booth at E3 because they were moving their headquarters at the time. And so if they go into this E3 and they don't have a booth again...
But I was saying that because that's... Time out. I was saying that way because the next month is actually the news that they were saying that they were not going.
Yeah.
So I left it like that. Yeah.
Well, we at this point, we know that Sega wasn't at E3.
Right.
But... I don't want to spoil the setup. I'm sorry, Kosky.
Spoiler.
Four sheets to the wind at this point. But I'm interested in seeing what Sega's going to do this year because, I mean, they don't really have a lot that they've shown that's going to be coming up in 2016 as far as strong footage. I mean, we've seen some stuff from Persona. There's some, you know, a few other games, but I don't know. I don't know what Sega has up its sleeve. One of the things that I am going to be really looking forward to is what they're going to be doing with Sonic the Hedgehog in 2016.
That's going to be, it's the big anniversary.
It's the big anniversary. What is, and everyone's looking forward to seeing what Sonic Team is going to do. So if Sega does have a presence at E3, that's going to be the game that everyone's going to be looking for from Sega at E3.
Choo Choo Rocket 2 confirmed.
Oh. That's it.
Well, let's go see them.
Adventure 3.
We've seen them blow it many years already.
Yeah, really.
It'll happen. It'll happen.
Well, we can hold out hope for a new Sonic Adventure, or at least a new Sonic game in general.
Yeah.
Alright. It looks like I'm up again, but Sonic I don't game. Have any links in here to bring us in. So it looks
Use
like
we're imagination, folks. Looking at our face.
Exactly. So May comes around and Sega is ranked as the 13th highest grossing mobile publisher of last year. So in 2014, I guess, Sega was the 13th highest. And, you know, actually, you say, okay, hey, 13th highest, that's not that big of a deal. It actually is. I mean, if you look at all the different mobile publishers,
that's dating back then,
yeah, I mean, it is a pretty big deal. And back then, in 2014, Sega was putting out a lot of mobile games. Last year, 2015, or this year, I guess, not that many games from a mobile standpoint. There was, a few key games like, Sonic Runners, Sonic Boom, Sonic Dash 2, or whatever that is called, Chain Chronicle. Those were the kind of the big releases in 2015. But in 2014, they had a lot of other releases. So it was a big deal. App Annie is a ranking website that ranks the top 52 grossing mobile developers. They create a unique deck of cards out of those top 52, and within that, Sega was the Jack of Spades. I don't know what to make of that, but
they did release a decent amount.
I think that means they weren't expecting Sega to do that well.
I guess
Is
so.
Is that when they made that Crazy Taxi spinoff and imported the original, like City Rush or whatever it was called?
Disturbing Uber Driver.
It was done by Hardlight.
Yeah, I didn't like that game. I'll have to be honest with you. Not having free, full control over the taxi is just... I couldn't get over that.
At least we got a port of the original, though, so it wasn't all that bad.
Yeah.
Offspring music.
Next up was the Puyo Puyo stage premiered in Japan. Kopke, tell me about this, because... You put this on here. I have no idea what we're talking about.
Basically, Sonic Team was celebrating 24 years of this franchise, so they made a stage play. And actually, Sega started doing these stage plays a lot during the year. They made one for Puyo Puyo and other one for Yakuza, for the Yakuza series. And they started releasing DVDs for these, and a lot of people went. You know, Puyo Puyo may not be a big thing in the United States, but it is in Japan. Like, it is actually Sega's biggest franchise over there. So yeah, the thing that this got the stage play was pretty big for them.
What would you do? What would you do with these? They're just basically a bunch of little, like blobs.
It's like Tetris, right?
How would you make a play out of that?
No, actually, the thing is with Puyo Puyo is that Puyo Puyo is actually a spin-off of another series, which is called Mado Monogatari, which is actually translates as Magical Tale. And this game was an RPG, a dungeon crawler, that had an actual story. And what happened is that all these characters from
Mado Monogatari...
Yeah.
whatever. So these characters were translated into the Puyo Puyo series. So they actually have a story. And when they write most of these Puyo Puyo stories, they actually are based on this franchise.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Like, they take a lot of those things into these stage plays or this in other videos and stuff like that. And actually, Puyo Puyo has a story each game, and it's just that people that are really into it get what's going on.
They get the Puyo fever.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
Yeah.
All right.
Keep your day job. I never saw that coming.
All right, so moving on. This is the news that Kopke didn't want us to spoil. Sega decides not to attend E3, and they said, over the next months, Sega of America will be focused on the restructure and relocation of Southern California, and we've decided not to attend E3 with our own booth this year, a rep told Game Informer. And so that, you know, obviously people got really upset at that. This is the first time, I can't even remember, this was the first time maybe since the very beginning of E3 that Sega did not attend an E3. And, you know, to be honest with you, I don't know if that was a bad idea, because looking at the releases of games throughout the year, they didn't really have all that much to show. I don't know if there was not a lot of tricks up their sleeve that they had in years past to wow people, because obviously that's what people, developers like to do when they come out, you know, at E3. They like to show unannounced games. Sega really didn't have a lot of that. I mean, what would they show? Like, what would they have gotten, really? If you look at what came out in 2015, especially the latter half of 2015, what would they have really been able to do up to that point that they would have excited people? I mean, obviously, maybe the Yakuza stuff, but...
Well, they actually announced that through the PlayStation conference. They actually announced Yakuza and...
Later in the year. Yeah, later in the year, but I don't even know
Shenmue if... Shenmue 3, yes!
I don't know if that had even been finalized up to that point. And you're right, that would have been an awesome thing to have done if Sega had any involvement in that.
Well, besides giving them the IP, I guess, or letting them use it. I feel like it's some kind of weird, like, agreement they have. Like, it was more like a handshake instead of probably things that have to do with lawyers.
It's kind of letting your neighbor go out and bang your wife and then wanting some credit for that.
Basically. I was going to say borrow sugar, but we could use that one, too.
I mean, you're standing on your porch, like, waving at the neighborhood, and be like, I made that happen. Whereas, like, the whole neighborhood got to see your wife get big.
You're, like, looking in the window, they're doing it, just, like, hand out, waving, hey.
So is you Suzuki the guy banging? Okay.
Yeah, we might as well.
I'm thinking too deeply into this.
You could get a better look at your butcher. I'm sorry, that was a good All right, moving on.
Late night Sega nerds.
Sega nerds after dark.
Yes. Yeah, up all night. Sega to remove a certain amount of mobile games from the market. So this actually was met with a little bit of controversy. So Sega removed several games from iOS, Google Play, and Amazon Store. And let's see, it didn't have a list of all the games, but basically people didn't understand why Sega was going back and removing older games that they had released in different mobile stores. But after I did some digging, it actually made a lot of sense, because what these companies have to do, they have to have a team, essentially, that if you have older games in any of these different digital stores, you have to ensure that these games are constantly updated to be able to run on newer devices. And when Sega said, they said something like they didn't meet their quality expectations or whatever of anymore, Sega didn't mean that the games themselves didn't meet their expectations of quality or anything like that. That's what I think was some of the confusion surrounding their... They had some, kind of a weird announcement that it essentially these games didn't meet the quality expectations or whatever. What I think that they meant by that is that the games themselves didn't meet the new devices' quality. Mm-hmm. So you play them on like a brand new device, they don't play that well because the devices themselves have changed dramatically from when these games were initially released and developed on those old systems. So you play it on a new one and it sucks. It's not playing well. It's, you know, laggy. But you're using like a Galaxy S5 or S6 or whatever, and you don't understand why these old games are running like crap. And so, say instead of Sega continually to focus on updating and spending resources on updating these old games that aren't really selling anymore because they're released 3-4 years ago, they're saying, instead of doing that, we're just going to take them off these digital stores completely, and we're going to focus on the newer games that we're developing. That's essentially what ended up happening, and people were kind of freaked out because they were saying, why is Sega removing all these games that we had purchased previously, and why are they saying that they don't meet quality expectations when they're themselves release these games? So that's essentially mostly, what happened.
Mostly it was because people were paranoid for the previous news that Sega was restructuring, that they were laying off people, and they were saying, oh no, they don't have money to keep mobile games around and stuff like that.
Oh shit, son of a bitch. Yep, that's what happened.
What'd you do?
I dropped my phone. Oh. It didn't meet my quality expectations. So, all right, next up is Grandia 2 Remastered for PC was announced. And so Gung Ho Online Entertainment America came out and said, hey, you know what? We're going to release a remastered version of Grandia 2 on Steam. I think there was some sort of poll that they took at some point, and everyone wanted Grandia 2, and they said, okay, we're going to make Grandia 2 on Steam, and they ended up releasing that. Has some HD visuals. It has mouse and keyboard controller support, Steam achievements, and trading cards. I ended up buying the game, and because I am super, super busy, didn't get the chance to really play it like I wanted to. Grandia 2 is one of my all-time favorite RPGs. I still, to this day, think it has one of the best voice acting of any games ever. I absolutely love it. I also think the battle system is super, super fun. It never felt repetitive. And I'll be honest, I was playing a pirated version on the... I was playing basically burned discs on the Dreamcast.
You do know we're broadcasting live, right?
I know, but... I think Statute of Limitations
for next year... For news from January. Seconders get sued over piracy.
It's been over 10 years
Happy
ago.
Happy New Year!
Come at me, Sega, you sons of bitches.
But, Happy New Year! We're the good all thing in
is, the good thing is they probably can't afford lawyers these days, guys.
But,
So what ended up happening, I remember when I was playing the game on the Dreamcast through my burned discs, is...
Legally.
I played through the whole game. It was playing wonderfully.
Just needed additional copies.
That's until all. I got to the very last like portion of the game, and those who have played Grandia 2 know what I mean. And so I was playing through the like kind of the last portion where it's leading up to the last boss. But for some reason, whenever any cutscene would happen, and that was one of the parts of the games, like most of the story was told in cutscenes and things like that. It would start the cutscene and it would skip to right at the end, and then it would start going on to the next thing. So I was missing out on huge chunks of the story, and I was completely involved in the game. I was completely hooked on it, and I was like, oh crap, what do I do? I'm going to miss out. I'm going to end up beating the game, and I'm going to miss out on the story. And so instead of just pushing on and missing out and beating the game, I just turned off my Dreamcast and was like, okay, I'm going to have to go back and buy the real game. And I ended up buying the game a couple times throughout the years, but I just never was able to go back and put the time into the game and get up back to that point again. So I'm hoping I can at some point do this on the PC game. And since then, I went and also bought the Dreamcast version as well, just because when this news came out, I got so excited about it. So,
Jesus, I want your money.
I have a long history with Grandia. I absolutely love that game. And I always maintained, even though it was a very unpopular opinion during the Dreamcast era, that it was a better game than Skies of Arcadia. And I know a lot of people still will hiss at me for that. See? Copy the city.
Yeah, snakes or something. What the
I know.
Back, snakes, back.
Next up is... Image Epic. filed for bankruptcy.
Yeah, what he said.
So this was the development company that recently released Stella Glow. They filed for bankruptcy. Yes, and Stella Glow was the last game that they ended up releasing. It just released not too long ago on the 3DS. I don't know if anyone else wants to say anything about them. I never played any of their games.
I played Seven Dragon. Seven Dragon was actually their best title ever because they weren't really that good. The thing is, was that they really made a lot of RPGs. The thing, it was a real controversy with this company because they, when they came out for the first time, they were saying, we're going to save the RPG industry and, you know, resurrect what Japan is doing with JRPGs. And everybody was like, yeah, sure, you're talking too big. And the thing is that they never standed to that statement. But the only thing is that their really greatest title was Seven Dragon. And Seven Dragon is actually one of the best RPGs that Sega ever did on the PSP. Well, the Seven Dragon series, because the first one is on, I think it's DS for Nintendo, and the second one, that was Seven Dragon 2020 and 2022, were cataloged as one of the best RPGs ever done on a handheld system, which was the PSP. And that's their legacy, so they are now bankrupted, and practically Sega owns their asses now because Stella Glow and Seven Dragon 3 are actually done by Sega.
Nice.
Well, produced by them.
Okay, and we'll just I'll quickly go through the rest of this month. Sega and Capcom crossover event Worlds Unite began during this month. So this is the big comic book crossover. This last, or 2015 was the year of the crossover event. Like every major publisher from Marvel to DC to Valiant to Archie Comics, they all had these big crossover things that everyone wanted to do and everything. So this was kind of their big crossover thing is Worlds Unite. And so it was basically, this is building upon the previous year's crossover event that Sega and Capcom did with Mega Man and Sonic. Worlds Unite, I read a few of these issues and they were pretty good. I didn't end up finishing them, so I kind of felt bad about that because I want to kind of complete my collection of them. They had some neat artwork that would eventually go together to create this big mural, which was really, really cool looking. I am disappointed because Alex Kidd was supposed to have been in them, and I didn't read the point up to where Alex Kidd came in the story, so I was always kind of bummed out about that. But I don't know if you guys read any of these comics, though.
No,
I didn't. I seen bits and pieces of them, but that was about it.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to.
All right, well, there we go with that. Nintendo announces Mario and Sonic at the Rio 2016 Olympic Games, and no one cared. and that's pretty much
kind of ran itself into the ground, to be honest.
Yeah, no one. I mean, honestly, that just. I'm sorry. I think at this point, Sega has still the Olympic Games license, and they just feel like they've got to do something with them. And
it wasn't
Mario
the
Sonic,
Nintendo thing? Like, it wasn't part of like their agreement with Nintendo to release like a...
I don't think this was part of that agreement. They had already fulfilled the three games up to this point. Mm-hmm. And I think what it is that this is like... For Sega, this is the formula that works for the Olympic Games license. I mean, this is the tried and true... Put Mario and Sonic characters together, put them out there in some Olympic Games style
Mario
events.
Mario is so wrong on those titles. Like, he's unathletic. He's actually addicted to Amanita muscaria mushroom, which is actually a narcotic. It's like saying doping is right to win the Olympics. Wait, it's so wrong that he's there.
Winners do drugs.
Yeah,
that's right.
Screw the weeds, so take your drugs.
Best friend all of a sudden. And then that's pretty much it. So we will go into June.
Well, we have some highlights. Like, if you want to quickly read it, like the data discs released on that month.
Data disc finals, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Data disc finals, Streets of Rage, and Shinmu. I didn't get those. I wish I had because...
Oh, I wanted the Streets of Rage one so bad.
Do you have a vinyl player, Chris?
I do. My wife bought me one for Father's Day.
Oh,
and I got a nice Johnny Cash vinyl for Christmas as well. Cook and Becker released some limited edition prints of some classic Sega games that looked amazing. I really, really wanted the Phantasy Star one. It just looked so badass.
I want the Space Carrier.
They were so expensive.
They were very expensive, and I just don't have anywhere to put them in my new house. My wife has completely taken over the whole place. You guys remember my old backdrop when we used to do the podcast. I had a whole basement to myself. Now it's all basically relegated into a tiny Harry Potter closet underneath the stairs of our house.
Stay in your cupboard.
Yeah. And then there was a Sonic Stream demo that was released by fans that I saw a video of, and it looked like a very bad Saturn game that Sega rightfully never released a full game of, because it was going to be pretty bad. So
yeah, it got built into Sonic Jam anyway.
Yeah.
So
it kind of worked.
I think, Jason, you're up for June.
Oh, well, we got more E3 news, and one everybody wanted to know that finally got confirmed. Shenmue 3 confirmed, everybody.
Yay!
Apparently, it's last year's Sony E3 press conference. Yu Suzuki came up to talk about his Kickstarter, which is basically, I want to make Shenmue 3, give me money. For the PC and the PS4, the campaign of the Guinness Record to become the fastest video game to raise $1 million in pledges. And then also, Yu Suzuki declared that he wanted to release HD Shenmue 1 and 2, which everybody's been begging for. And then he pretty much just promoted himself and flashed Shenmue everywhere.
Hopefully that's one thing they announced if Sega does show up at E3 next year is HD versions of Shenmue 1 and 2, because those are technically Sega games, so they can't really do anything with Shenmue 3, because it's, well, I think they could, because it's still their IP, so they could show something, but it's developed by YSNet, and it's confusing.
YSNet or EaseNet? Because...
Ease,
the series.
But isn't it Yu Suzuki, though? Why would it be Ease?
Because that's how they pronounce it over there.
Oh.
We are so
What confused. Do you mean by over there, Copy?
Those people. Of you. Those
people. What about Ease?
Ease. I'm going to say YS because I'm American.
Okay.
Ease. So after that, more Sega news about games in E3 and Sony exclusives. Apparently, Gio Corsi, I have no clue who this is, announced Yakuza 5 heading for a Western release in fall.
He's the head of PlayStation third-party development, for those who don't know.
Okay, is that, thank
little,
you for clearing that up.
This little fat guy who looks like Don DeLuise?
He does look like him, yeah.
That just made me think Cannonball Run, oh my god. But yeah. So yeah, Yakuza 5 was a thing, and it's a thing now, and it's out, and go get Yakuza 5.
Fuck yeah, Yakuza.
And then next, what we were talking about earlier with Sonic Boom, Sega announced the sequel to Sonic Boom, Fire and Ice.
Nobody saw that coming.
Yeah, I was surprised by this, because I thought... After that, the Sonic Boom series was going to be dead. I knew how much Sega wanted the Sonic Boom series to go on and how important it was to them. I just didn't see this coming because I thought that I didn't know if Sega felt that the Sonic Boom name was toxic at that point, that anything that they did was just going to be lumped into that original thing. I'm very... impressed, though, that they're sticking with it, not thinking that it's just going to be this joke, but I think that Sanzaru Games has the talent and the ability to make a good game. I think with the necessary time that they're going to be able to do that, and like I said before, I do hope that they take some cues from the animated show, because it is done very, very well, and if they can take that personality and just the style and the humor that's kind of been able to develop in that animated series and apply that to the game, I think they're going to have a very entertaining and fun game on their hands.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So yeah, that was supposed to come out in the summer and then ended up getting delayed until next year. And then more Sonic. And then more Sonic Boom news. A Sega producer discussing the future of the Boom franchise. Basically, the gist of it is there's going to be two different types of Sonic that are going to be taken care of. There's going to be the Sonic Boom Sonic, which is basically a renewal of the series in general and all the characters and such, what we were talking about earlier. And then Sega of Japan is going to deal with classic Sonic and all that type of such.
And that's what I was saying way back when Sega was like talking about and when they were promoting the Boom games, is that I think Sega wants to take the same approach that that the Call of Duty series has done, where 1 year you'll have one developer take on the game, and the next year you'll have a different one. And I think what Sega wants to do is have a Sonic team develop Sonic game 1 year, and then the following year have a Sonic Boom game, and then they'll keep trading off. Whereas each year we'll have a new Sonic game. One will be one of the either the mainline Sonics, where whether it's like, you know, Sonic 5 or Sonic Adventure 3 or whatever it may be, and then we'll have a new Sonic Boom game, and then we'll have a different Sonic team game. That's what I think. In a perfect world, what will end up happening with the Sonic series going forward?
If they would do it right, Sonic and the Sonic Boom, that could be a thing.
Yep.
Fighting Guile
Sonic
the entire time.
Sonic Boom.
Or right. Sonic Shuffle 2 as a 25th anniversary game.
Hey, I love Sonic Boom.
I thought Sonic Boom or Sonic Shuffle.
Shuffle, that's what I mean. Yep.
Sonic Party.
Sonic Party 10.
So then next we're going to be slightly going back a little bit about Monster Boy, which we were talking about earlier, and how Yuzo Koshiro joined up to compose some of the music for it. If you all don't know Yuzo Koshiro, he's the composer who worked on all the Streets of Rage games, Ease, Shenmue, Shinobi, basically all the classics besides Hero. And he's going to be working on the music for Monster Boy. Anybody have any opinions?
He's awesome. He's amazing.
Splooge.
Besides us splooshing about how awesome Yuzo Koshiro is.
He just makes great music, man. It's good.
And he recently made the soundtrack for Seven Dragon 3, which came out this year in Japan.
There's a really good documentary. I forget the name of it, but it's basically... Digging in the Carts. Thank you, Copy. Yeah. And I watched that a few months back, and it was amazing. Basically, it's a documentary that goes in and looks at some of the most iconic Japanese sound
composers,
music composers for the old school games, like the during the 8-bit era, the arcade era, the 16-bit era, and Yuzo Koshiro is featured heavily in that. And it's really interesting. If you're a fan of game music and especially Koshiro, and you haven't watched it yet, definitely go check it out, because it really focuses a lot on him, and it's very
and
good.
And I just want to add two more comments to that. The one is that I really like how Yuzo Koshiro appears like a discotheque rock star in that documentary.
Oh, yeah.
Like with the lights and everything. He looks like pretty badass. And the other one is that not only Yuzo Koshiro is in that documentary, but also Sega's Hero and Takanobu Yoshi, who really make a wonderful appearance.
Hero and Takanobu are in it? That's amazing. Hero, honestly, has to be like my favorite composer of all time.
Yeah.
And one album that people don't really talk about that Yuzo Koshiro composed is the Wang and Midnight games, the Maximum Tune series.
And the story of Thor.
That too. You want to hear a really good soundtrack, listen to the Wang and Midnight soundtrack.
I didn't know that Koshiro did the Ease games either.
Yeah, he worked on a couple of the Ease games, I believe. I don't know which ones off the top of my head.
But they have some of the most amazing soundtracks ever.
They really do. And then we had Sonic Runners Worldwide launch on June 25th.
At this point of the year, we never knew if the game was really coming out in the West, so this was good news for everyone. Like,
I guess they teased it.
Yeah, because Sega said something along the lines of, we cannot confirm if Sonic Runners will receive a release in the West, which I don't understand why they would say that, because they obviously, up to this point, they had planned for it. I just don't understand why they would say something like that when they definitely did have plans to release it. Mm-hmm. And it was... plain to see that they did have plans for that. Just the fact, I don't know, it was just some weirdly confusing message that they put out. I don't understand it.
Exactly.
And the thing is that it actually went to Japan a lot of months, and people were like, faking IP or doing this developer kit for Android to be able to play it. So I guess the pressure blew on them, and they finally had to announce.
Finally released it, and just like, stop hacking, let's just release it and get it over with.
I hope they can do that for Phantasy Star Online 2, but they're not like that.
Yeah, I don't think we're getting Phantasy Star 2 for a while. And then we had some other highlights in the month. Angry Birds had a crossover with Sonic, apparently, which I didn't even know was a thing. You know, Angry Birds are just everything now.
People got so mad about that one.
We got a release of the Sonic X series, from what it looks like, or an announcement of the Sonic X series on Blu-ray.
By Discotheque Media.
Oh, I would be so hyped for that. I actually really enjoyed Sonic X. We got the Virtua Fighter costumes in Super Smash Bros., which, if I remember correctly, it's a costume of Akira from the original Virtua Fighter.
And that other guy, Jackie.
Oh, yeah, Jackie. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. And then we had the Hard Girls stuff.
Which, yeah, figures announcements by Good Smile Company and Freehand.
Figures and stuff from Good Smile. And then that seems to wrap it up for that month. And then July, if somebody would like to take over.
Me? I think I was next in line, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I think you are.
So basically, at the beginning of the month, we had the fan-made Phantasy Star Online remake, which had a playable demo. And it was good because we had no real Phantasy Star Onlines in the West, so the way many people got their fix was through this demo. So now there is a playable version that everyone can download, and I haven't touched it yet. Has anyone else tried it out?
Graham did it.
I agree.
Graham tried it out, and he was actually in the review, like, saying it is a little bit buggy, but hey, this is made by fans, so
yeah, really. I mean, you kind of have to expect that kind of thing,
right?
Until they like sit and work on it.
Yeah. Also, around this time, we also had the Shenmue voice cast, July 3rd, because I think 2 weeks after that, the funds for the Kickstarter was going to end, so that was fun. Mm-hmm. And Atlus and Vanillaware were developing a remastered version of Odin Sphere. So Atlus announced this, and they teamed with Vanillaware to develop a remastered version of everyone's favorite 2D RPG, Odin Sphere. Currently, it is scheduled for a release of January 14th, which is, what, 2 weeks? And a half, two and a half weeks.
Like that. That's a really good game.
Yeah, for PS4, PS3, and Vita, so I'll probably try that out myself.
Yeah, I might get it for PS3. I actually enjoyed the PS2 version.
Yeah.
And you get to talk about one of the best games.
Tembo, that badass elephant.
Yo, don't hate on Tembo. The game's really fun.
Yeah.
It is so made by Game Freak, the guys who make Pokemon.
Yes. So what'd you think of it, Jason?
I thought it was a really good platforming game. I mean, I had a lot of fun with it.
I thought it was okay. Like, I didn't feel like it really did anything to...
It didn't, like, do anything to break the mold, but right. it was fun for what it was. It kind of, like, brought me back to the days of... As weird of an example as this sounds, it kind of brings me back to the days of Donkey Kong Country and, like, the Rhino levels.
I can get that.
And that was just, like, what made it fun for me, because that's a good platformer in my book.
Maybe I was expecting a little more from it, from just being that Game Freak was developing out. I don't know. It was a very formulaic platformer, I thought. It didn't do anything that wowed me, but it was a solid game. So it was good. I was glad
I really dug the art style. The art style was done really good.
Yeah, definitely. And I think Tembo is an interesting character. I think they could do some more with him. So hopefully it's not the last we see of Tembo the Badass Elephant.
Indeed. Following that, Sonic Dash 2 Sonic Boom was released on the Android. The iOS was going to get a later release date, closer to October. So Sonic Dash, Sonic 2, Sonic Dash 2, Sonic Boom, Jesus.
That's a hard one.
Have you guys tried it?
Super Turbo Alpha Hyper EX Edition.
I've played it. I think the original, I've been Sonic Dashed out. And
yeah.
It just, they did some interesting things with it, just trying to add in some of the Sonic Boom features with the inner beam and things like that, and it seemed a little interesting at first, and I did get excited because I loved Sonic Dash, the original one. It felt too much of the same, and by the time I ended up getting into that, I've just played too much of the first game, so I wasn't really that enthralled with the game.
So, which one is Sonic Dash again? That's one of the other runner games, right?
It's an endless runner where it's like a third-person perspective behind Sonic, and you're running.
Okay,
you know,
it's pretty much Sonic Temple Run, more or less.
Exactly, but yes. You know, I thought the first game was really done very well. I think it used all of the cool aspects of Sonic, and it made sense from a gameplay perspective. So I really liked the first game, but just Sonic Dash 2.
I just burned it out for you. It was like too much.
All right. So following that, we had the big kind of positive message coming from Sega talking about the less than stellar titles that have been released by Sega over the past couple of years. And they've basically said, we know they're crap. We agree with you that they're crap, and we will release better games in the future. So Sega CEO Hajime Satomi hopes that the company could win back the trust of their loyal fan base because he does feel like they betrayed our trust, and they will promise you that quality will be their main priority. So they do hope to become the brand everyone loved back in the 90s. And, you know, they were left nothing with but reputation, so, you know, basically the string of crappy games that they released. So, do you guys think that they will follow up on this? Do you believe that they are going to actually keep their promise, or do you think that the games won't be as stellar as they say it might be?
Well, there was a little problem with this interview because... The first guys that everybody got was some quotes that were taken from Polygon and those kind of mainstream sites that only take what they want. And the thing is, he was really talking about Japan, not really about
Sega of America.
Yeah, not Sega of America. So they basically said, now he's apologizing for everyone. But he was really talking about, like, really getting healthy their market first, so in order they can construct the other branches in a better way. So that was pretty much it. And everybody took, you know, the other way, like he's apologizing. He was saying, like, no, you know, like, we really screwed up, and we are thinking in ways of improving how the company is.
We need to figure out ways that we can figure out better ways to not release games in North America, is what he's saying.
And not to release games at all. We need
Actually, we have an update on that, but it's in other news that will be explained later on as we go on the review.
We're all going to get an
advertising. And where those Sega of America play in all of this new strategy?
All right, so let's go fly a little bit through this. So basically, other information that happened in July, Retron 5 added the Game Gear adapter, or will add... or now has added the Game Gear adapter. And, yeah, that's pretty cool. And other news that...
They did not add it, I should say. It did not come out.
Bastards.
I've emailed and messaged Hyperkin several times, and they continue to ignore all of our messages. And I sent them... Actually, it's funny. I sent them a message on a a DM on Twitter earlier today asking, like, hey, what is your No Kidding official press email, because we have a query to send you, because I want to find the status on this. They said they're going to release a Game Gear adapter for the Retron 5 by the end of the year. They have not done it, and I would like to know what the status, because the thing is, this is kind of a big deal for Game Gear collectors out there, because the Retron 5 adding a Game Gear adapter would be the very first time that Game Gear owners would be able to play Game Gear games on their TV.
I got an update on that, and it was basically that Retron and Hyperkin had a lot of legal problems regarding the emulation system they used for their console, and they were sued by the original programmers that were involved in this, so maybe that's what is happening and why is the delay going on. And actually, the first console who did it is actually the Retrofreak, because you can actually play Game Gear titles with that console.
I'd believe it.
Yep. I actually played a few titles. I played Restart, which is a specific title developed for the Game Gear. I played it under Retrofreak. Plays really nice.
All right.
Alright, so other quick news bits from the month. So the first teaser trailer for the Shenmue documentary was released. My jacket was actually in that documentary. Adam Scipione, I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right, he asked me to borrow my jacket, which he used in the trailer. And it turned out very well. I'm excited for the documentary. It'll probably come out next year. It was originally supposed to be about Shenmue 3 and how people wanted it, but now that it was announced, it's more about, you know, the fans themselves and how, you know, the reaction is to the game, and obviously it's going to have a little bit of a different spin on it.
So does this mean you're going to be in it?
Possibly. I mean, I recorded some things. I mean, it's not guaranteed, because I think the lighting was bad and the microphone, but whatever. my jacket's it.
They don't have me, but they have my clothes. Yeah. I'm sorry to cut you off there.
Yeah. at least I'll know that I was in the documentary. The Sega Hard Girl, Hard Girls. Hyperdimension Neptunia teaser site was launched. That's pretty exciting. C-Man's developer said a sequel is planned for the 3DS. I don't know if he is actually guaranteeing that there was a sequel, but he said there might be a possibility. We talked about that earlier in the year.
He said that was there was a development on a 3DS sequel, but never got out.
But it never got out, right. That's what it was, yeah. So there was a planned game, but it fell through for one reason or the other. But I would have wanted to see a C-Man game on the 3DS. Zillion Anime HD Remaster for Blu-ray. It's a box set. It was announced, which is pretty cool. Was there a release date for that?
Yeah, it actually released on October this year.
Oh, did you get it?
No, it was pretty expensive.
Oh, well, fuck that then. Okay.
Like way too expensive, like $200 expensive.
$200?
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, yeah. Because it's contain art and stuff like that.
Yeah. And there was a back and forth with the Phantasy Star Online 2 English SEA edition, which was removed and added again, and removed and added again with its IP block. So, yeah. Now we're jumping.
Yeah, that was a thing.
Yeah, yeah, and that was annoying. So
yeah, that was really annoying because people were like getting hope to finally be able to play the game, but never did.
Yeah,
that was pretty awful. Now let's go with August, and August started with this rumor that Universal Pictures was acquiring rights for a Golden Axe live action movie. It was pretty interesting. The rumor said that Universal Pictures was in talks with this new company that Sega created to deal with their holdings, which is called Tokyo-based Stories International, and they were like they said that they were negotiating with Universal Pictures to not only do Golden Axe, but other to like sell a package to this company to make more Sega movies. And we actually had that kind of news as one of the last news from 2014. So this makes a lot of sense that it was into play. I don't know if you guys want to add something to it.
Reminds me of back in the day when they tried to make a when they were going to make a Crazy Taxi movie.
I think we were lucky that we never got that one. But actually,
yeah,
Golden Axe,
they were going to try like Golden Axe does. They could kind of do like a Conan the Barbarian type of thing.
Yeah.
They really wanted to, but Crazy Taxi would just be like, I don't know, maybe like Fast and the Furious. I don't know.
I think a Golden Axe movie, if given the proper budget, could be really well done. If not, it would be really, really, really bad.
But actually, it's in good hands in case Universal does it. Like Universal really knows how to handle most of these imaginary and like fantasy films.
Or it'd actually, be really funny if they took just a lot of old, like, retired, like, 80s, you know, Hollywood actors, like Dolph Lundgren.
That would be nice.
Joe Pesci, and, you know, I don't know, some... as Gilius would be great.
Oh, my God, Pesci is Gilius? That would be great.
Like, if not for Universal, Marvel wouldn't be in the place Marvel... movies are in today.
And
so
Jean-Claude Van Damme could be them. Tyrus.
I was thinking more Arnold, but okay.
Okay, yeah. or this other guy who played He-Man on the live action.
Man.
That's Dolph Lundgren.
Universe movie.
Yeah. I figured Dolph would be Axe Battler.
That could work.
An old
now, and also... Also in this month, like, it was announced that there were, like, some characters from other companies hidden in Super Mario Maker, and one of them was Sonic. The announcement was made in this month, and, like, people were, like, really excited. And I don't know, in the end, how this was activated. Was it with an amiibo or something, or you just unlocked it in a certain level?
I think it was through an amiibo if you put the amiibo in, and then you have to get the secret special mushroom. I don't. It's a lot of hidden BS that you got to go through.
Okay.
But I don't know. Yeah, that was the thing.
And
you
could
play with all the different characters.
And there was also this news that Chris covered really well. That was like Sega Japan announcing PSO2 coming to PlayStation 4. Like, not only the West is not getting it, it was like Sega has done everything they can with Phantasy Star Online 2 in Japan, like getting anime, getting ports, getting more episodes, getting crazy tons of content, and now is getting a PS4 version that it's looking really, really gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It was like rubbing it in our faces. Okay, now the next news was pretty exciting during this, I think it was Eurogamer conference. Correct me if I'm wrong. Like in this Xbox conference, Microsoft was, yes, it was Eurogamer. Like Microsoft came out and said, hey, these amazing guys from Sega, from Creative Assembly, are making our new Halo Wars 2 game. And that was announced at the Eurogamer conference. Like, you know, the time where Microsoft really had to make some really good announcements because Sony was kicking their asses and they were announcing this. And, backwards compatibility thing that was big for them. So this happened. In this. Are you guys excited about this title?
I mean, I enjoyed the first Halo Wars. I mean, I'm pretty excited for Halo Wars 2. It looks like it'll be good. I mean, especially if it's being made by the team that made Total War.
Yeah, those guys are the kings of RTS right now. So
exactly.
It's really amazing that they are going to get this proper release. And other quick news that happened during the month, this is Grandia 2 Anniversary Edition was launched, as we previously said in the other months. And Cospa, this brand, Japanese brand that makes a lot of anime and video game licensing merchandising, was announcing a huge, a really, really huge amount of Sega merchandise, which was kind of a big deal. because it made a lot of noise during Tokyo Game Show further on. And also Sega started to show some signs of recovery because its games division was actually showing profit for the first time in the year. And that's how this August month ended. Yep.
Merchandising.
Yeah. I think it's Chris' turn to talk us about September, which was basically Tokyo Game Show. Chris?
Hey.
We're in September now.
I hear Lowrider, but yeah. I don't see what we're talking about.
It was a weird Twitter video.
What, did you get invaded by the George Lopez virus?
We won't talk about it. So, going into September, we had the Tokyo Game Show. And unlike E3, Sega actually had a presence at Tokyo Game Show. Some of the things that they showed there were the physical version of the 3D Classics Volume 2, and they had a twin pack launch that also included the previous volume. So basically, almost all of the 3D Classics that were released up to that point were released in a physical edition, which we have yet to see here in the West, and we are still holding out hope that we'll get eventually.
They keep teasing me. They keep teasing me with Power Drift.
Now, Power Drift is like the big title from that.
Besides Puyo Puyo.
Yep.
No, I think Power Drift made more hype than Puyo Puyo 2.
Also at this event, I'll just quickly kind of go down the list. Segata Sanshiro was announced for Project Cross Zone 2. Neptunia versus Sega Hard Girls. They released a PlayStation Vita release date. The Yakuza 1 remaster and Yakuza 6 was announced for PS4, which is big, big news. Let's see here. Persona 5 was delayed, which was a big bummer. It was originally scheduled to be released in the quarter four of 2015, and now it's been pushed to 2016 with no specific release date. We have no idea when it's going to release. We hope it will be released in the first or second quarter of 2016, but we just don't know yet. Then Yu Suzuki released the Shenmue 3, I guess this would be the PayPal Slacker Backer campaign on September 17th, where this was after the Kickstarter ended. They were accepting PayPal donations. From what I gathered, it was not a very big success. It didn't meet any of their stretch goals or anything like that. So it seems like the PayPal contribution and the PayPal push was not done very well and didn't get met with much success.
So basically kind of like a Patreon, more or less. Like donating money to Shenmue?
It was just basically for anyone who hadn't yet donated that they would get an opportunity to donate through PayPal. And they're still trying to figure out if they're going to allow PayPal donators to be able to get the rewards that the Kickstarter donators are going to be able to receive. And that they did a poll through Twitter, and apparently people were upset by that because many of the contributors to the Kickstarter weren't on Twitter and weren't able to voice their opinions on the poll on whether people on the PayPal should get these same prizes. So they're redoing the poll now via email or something like that. I don't care.
Okay.
It seems like such a whatever. Silly thing. Yeah, it's stupid. Just make the damn game. That's all I care about.
Yep, exactly. It's something that I was pretty excited about for the last
Volgar the Viking was ported to Dreamcast. So Crazy Viking Studios, we've actually had these guys on the Nerdcast. We're good friends with them. They made Volgar the Viking on Steam, which was originally a Kickstarter game. Mm-hmm. Man, why am I forgetting? I keep forgetting. I blame this on my disease, but it was based on, help me, it was an old arcade game.
Rastan?
Thank you, Rastan. Thank you. It's very heavily influenced by Rastan. But Volgar the Viking, very, very good game. I downloaded it and burned a copy on the Dreamcast, and it was fun. I mean, it was Volgar the Viking on Dreamcast. I was told about the fact that they were looking to port this game on Dreamcast a long, long time ago. I was privy to a video early in 2015 of the game running on Dreamcast, but I talked to Christopher of Crazy Viking Studios, and he was like, don't put it out yet because we don't know if we're going to release a commercial version or what of the game yet. So ultimately, they didn't end up releasing a commercial version. They just released it, you know, basically a shareware version, you know, just as it was, and which is kind of cool. But it would have also been neat to see a full commercial release of a Dreamcast where you get the jewel case and everything,
like a Hucast release or like that Rush Rush Rally Racing game.
Right,
you actually get a physical disc and such.
For those that remember the at the Kickstarter, they did have a Genesis, like one of the plastic clamshell boxes. That was one of the higher pledges that you could get, and the game essentially came on a USB stick, but you got this sweet little
For Volgar,
yeah.
That's really cool.
It was really neat, but it was several hundred dollars, and I don't blame anyone for not pledging for that one. But the game
is
very,
ask you, how does the Dreamcast version run? Does it run the full 60?
Does it run
at a decent speed?
It's not at anywhere close to 60 frames per second. It's very noticeably slower from the frame rate. The resolution is noticeably a lot lower. But I mean, it still has the tried and true Volgar gameplay. It's there, but it does run at a noticeably slower frame rate. It's more of kind of just a novelty to be able to burn the game and
just
kind of
to get it to work on a Dreamcast and there.
But what's kind of interesting is this is really the only kind of 2D platformer in this same, of this vein, I guess you could say, that was released on the Dreamcast. There weren't a lot of these type of games released. I mean, I think you could maybe say, I don't think there were any games, really, North American release games on the Dreamcast that were like this, like that same kind of Ghouls and Ghosts style 2D
like platformer. 2D platforming?
Yeah.
To be honest, yeah, no, I can't think of any. I could have sworn there was a Contra game, but I'm thinking PlayStation.
The only thing I was thinking for a minute there was Super Magnetic Neo, but I think that was more of like a Crash Bandicoot style, like third person.
I was strangely thinking Cannon Spike, but then I remembered that was like a top-down shooter.
Yeah, I don't think there really was anything like this. So this is kind of just an interesting moment in the Dreamcast indie developer.
We never got like a hack and slash like 2D classic platformer. I mean, the Rastan formula always worked.
Yep. And Jason, it's over to you for October now.
Okay, so I'm going to start. So, you guys like Genesis, right?
Of course.
I know. So,
you like meth? Of course.
Yeah, I was about to start it off with, you guys like meth? So, apparently, some guy in Georgia, of course it's in the South, bought a Sega Genesis from somewhere, and then he went to go pawn it at American Pawn in Moultrie in September. And apparently there was meth inside of his Genesis. So,
who hasn't got a little meth inside the Genesis? Come on.
Hey, you got to get the speed from Sonic somewhere, right? So they were apparently checking out the console, seeing if it worked and all that, and they looked in the cartridge slot, and there was apparently a bunch of crystal meth hidden inside of it. So, you know, when you got to go fast, you got to go fast.
This is blast processing at its best.
Exactly. Sega does what Nintendo don't. We do hard drugs. So, yeah, that was a thing. And then
I smoke rocks.
I do cocaine. So, as we were talking about earlier with Project Cross Zone 2,
we actually got the announcement for Ryo Hazuki being in Project Cross Zone 2. Famitsu posted a big list, well, kind of like an expose on what Project Cross Zone is going to be about and what it's going to be involved with. And Ryo Hazuki was confirmed with his original voice actor in the game, Matsukaze Masaya. So, yeah, Shenmue fan service.
Very nice.
Symphonic Sega. On October 10th, we had a Symphonic Sega concert at Tokyo Metropolitan Art Space. From what it looks like,
yeah.
there were some of the old classic Sega computer composers.
Yeah.
We had the Sonic music as usual. I think it was like the Sonic Adventure and all the classic Sonic music by Jun Sano. And of course, Takenobu came up and did the Daytona music.
Yep.
And you had Hiro, Otani, and then the Nights and the Dreams composers. And apparently it was
all
hosted
the big
by the Heart.
They're still there.
Pretty much the biggest, all the big Sega composers, like Hiro with all the 80s stuff.
Except for Naganuma and
Koshiro, I want to say, even though he wasn't that big into Sega's history besides Shinobi and Streets of Rage. But pretty much all your main Sega composers were there. The Hard Girls hosted it. And then Yuji Naka came up at some point along with the Puyo Puyo producer. And then that looks like it was really fun for Japan. Why don't they ever do this type of stuff in America? I would love to have like a video
they
game.
They hate us. Sola hates us.
Besides Video Games Live. I mean, Video Games Live was cool. They did have Mega Driver play one year. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Japan gets more awesome stuff that we don't get. Sega Amusement Europe changed its name. And from what it looks like, was expanding its market to all around the world. And then just basically strengthening the organization. That seems like a pretty
short
thing.
Well, this was more like...
I mean, if anybody else would like to
expand on that.
Like
the current American... Yeah, I think... This was more like Sega Amusements America, like going straight to zero, and actually Sega Amusements Europe, like taking over for them too. And actually, now they handle all the West in terms of arcade business.
Mm-hmm. So they pretty much just like took over.
Yeah.
Okay. And a 240-page book about Shenmue was released in Spain. Apparently, there's not really too much info on this, but I guess it's just a random book about Shenmue. Do either of you guys know anything about this?
Yes, Marcin and I did an interview with the authors, and the other thing is that this is the only book of its kind in the West. Like, there's no...
About Shenmue.
There's no Western book about the history of Shenmue, about how it was developed in the West. Like, this is the only book that it is for us. Like, there's a Japanese one, but, you know, it's really hard to get, it's really expensive, and it's only there.
So basically, it's kind of like a retrospective on Shenmue and all the information you would want to know about Shenmue, and basically an encyclopedia of sorts.
An encyclopedia and how it was done, and, you know, it has an interview with Yu Suzuki and...
Okay.
Cedric and... all the announcement.
It sounds like a really good thing to do. I mean, it sounds like we're all having a rollicking time right now. And we also got an announcement of Sega's Marza Animation Studios making a Resident Evil movie. From what it looks like, it says it's going to be released in 2017, so we got a little bit of waiting before that. I mean, if it's anything like Degeneration and the other animated movies, I'd expect it to be good. Did you guys ever watch the Resident Evil animated before?
I watched the first one, not the...
Like Degeneration, I forget the names of the other two. It's... I don't even know. At least I brought back Leon and Claire for it. And then... John Rook's statements about bringing Sega back. From what it looks like...
We have a lot of controversy
from what it looks like on this one. I mean, the big controversy about Colonial Marines and the Alien games.
and just trying to figure out what they're pretty much doing with the company or what they're making. The fact that they really notice just about the mobile and not any of the other stuff they make for Sega Europe, it looks like. So, yeah, Sega Europe's trying to slowly make its comeback. And then we had
They basically said, like, they are going to be really aggressive about the mobile front, but also, like, taking it slow in terms of what they are going to do with every franchise.
Yeah, they're just going to, like, balance every franchise out as much as possible. And then we had some highlights. Yu Suzuki hired the man behind the Shenmue HD videos to, I'm assuming, work on Shenmue at some point. Fighting Climax Ignition got characters got announced, and they got a hard girl stage. Virtual On models are going to be released. All the 3DS console themes, hype. I already bought like three of them. Did you guys buy any?
Which one? The themes. No, I don't have a 3DS. So.
Did you other two fall asleep already? Am I boring you all?
No.
I know you guys are like dead. Like Martin, I feel like a moron.
Martin is out.
He's just gone.
He had a long day.
He did. We got, from what it looks like, the GBA version of Choo Choo Rocket on the Wii U. We finally got a translation for Revolutionary Girl Lieutenant. Fantasy Star Generation 2 was translated and released in English. Which, if you guys don't know, that's the Sega Ages remake of Fantasy Star for the PS2, which is a really good game. That art style is really good, too. And we got an announcement of the Duke Nukem 3D port that never got released. At least I think it never got released.
It was only released in Brazil.
In Brazil, because of Tech Toy. So that was a thing. And Marston, I believe you are up if you are not half asleep.
Marston?
He's talking, but we don't hear him.
Okay. He's talking to our souls.
He's like raising his hands and yelling, and just it's great. I think he may or may not be in a phone call.
He says, give me a second. I think he was.
Are we just taking
old Playboy photos to Sable?
we'll just chill for a couple. Oh, we lost him.
We lost him. He'll be back. So,
Chris, do you want to take over for November, which is the largest month?
Okay, he's back. Are you here with us, Marson? Can we hear you? We can't hear you.
I heard nope, and then I'm reading the list here. We gotta use body language to hear Marston talk for once.
I love you, Marston.
Yeah, really.
My favorite Marston.
This podcast is going beautifully right now.
So until Marston gets back on track, I'll just go ahead and start in November. Pix and Love reveals Dreamcast prototype photo, and this was, I think, the one that looked like a mix between a Saturn and a Dreamcast. Am I right?
Yes. It actually looked like an actual Dreamcast, but with a silver thing and
like a Saturn paint job slightly.
I wish I could show the picture. I don't know where it's at, so.
I just typed the title into our site and it will appear in the search history.
Sega announces an agreement with Sanrio Games, so they're going to make some sort of Hello Kitty Sega stuff, which...
Hello Kitty Sonic confirmed.
Sega trademarks the Sega Cyclone Development Kit, which I assume is going to be some sort of, like, I don't know.
That's the new hardware from what...
It's an update. It's an update on the Sega Typhoon, which is an arcade board they use to port mobile games into arcade cabinets like Sonic Dash and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, very excited.
Basically, yeah.
And then Sega unveiled some Valkyria as a Revolution trailer and screenshots, which is actually pretty exciting. It's going to be the first fully next gen Valkyria Chronicles game. We're going to be getting the Valkyria Chronicles remaster early in 2016. At least it's going to be coming in Japan. There's been no announcement if either game is going to be coming to the West, but we hope it will be coming at some point. Larson has rejoined us. And
I thought I was talking this whole time, and I was just talking to a wall, essentially.
But in the case of the Valkyria Chronicles remaster, I don't think we need it, because it's basically our PC version.
Mm-hmm. You flipped us off a couple times while you were...
You say we don't need it, Captain?
Yeah, like, we already got the PC version, so...
But it wasn't in, like, HD or anything, though.
Yeah, it runs
but to have it upscaled on the PS4...
It looks much better, the PS4 version.
Nah. It's just basically the same.
So, Marcin, do you want to take over in November?
Sean, I'm at least take this one, because he was who told us our next subject originally.
A leading Japanese company kidnapped somebody. we can't hear him again.
Oh God, we broke it.
He's too afraid.
I mean, we could just swap it back and forth if you want to. I think we can talk about this a little bit. So apparently, from what we're told in the Untold History of Japanese Game Developers, Volume 2. That a leading Japanese game company kidnapped somebody's... Now we can hear you.
Yes.
Even though...
What are you doing? Would you like... Now we can't hear you.
Really?
He's holding his white snowball in his hand, and it's not working. Shake it vigorously.
Okay, so apparently somebody kidnapped somebody's sister to stop them from working with Nintendo, a quote-unquote leading company.
Yakuza.
Yeah, pretty much. It's Yakuza, from what we can tell, and it seems like it may have a small connection to Sega, or not.
Or a huge one.
It's very speculated.
It's very implied that this is a company that was near the Haneda Airport, and it was like... They also made, like, arcade cabinets, and, you know, it all fits into one company.
Yeah, it pretty much, the evidence is there, it could be Sega. And then, Chris, you want to take over the next one and go back and forth with this?
Sure. Marcin, are you here, or... I feel bad. Yep, Marcin, we can't hear you. I'm sorry, buddy.
This podcast has just turned into a complete clusterfuck.
We're almost there, so...
Yeah, I'm just going to use my webcam mic, because this is bullshit.
Yeah, just use that.
There you go. Okay. I wanted to talk about that one, though.
So, okay, tell us what you want to say.
Kidnapping.
Okay, so... Talk about it.
Yeah, so basically, there was some interesting information regarding that kidnapping. Basically, this was at the height of the Nintendo versus Sega, competition.
Console wars,
like Star Wars for consoles, but much more serious. Basically, they kidnapped one of the developer's daughters, who was working for Nintendo. They never say it was Sega, but it's highly implied that it was Sega based on the location that their company was living at the time. And the developer's sister, or the brother of the sister who was kidnapped, dropped a arcade cabinet in front of Sega's company. He didn't do it himself. He hired somebody to do it to show that he doesn't like what they did. And there have been numerous, instances, even like back in 2000 when they were doing these things to employees where they were isolating them. They have cameras and things like that. They just really messed up.
Konami does that too. I think the only one who's actually clean is Nintendo when it comes to Japanese, and maybe Bandai. I don't quote me on that.
It's like a tactic that some Japanese company use where they isolate employees to try to get them to quit rather than to fire them, so they don't have to pay them benefits.
So I guess they don't want to give them the pink slip or anything, so they just force them to quit with psychological warfare. So
I would work for Kojima. It could work for everybody else, right?
Yeah. Good for Kojima. He grew a beard. That's his breakup beard with
That's
Konami.
His breakup beard. Oh my god. Okay, so
you want to keep going?
So what's next? I could keep going. Yeah,
I could keep going.
Golden Axe remake with Odin Sphere visuals, which I thought that would have been amazing, but that was scrapped by Sega. So this is actually from the same book that had the kidnapping. Man, there's a string of bad decisions on their part, seriously. So basically, they found evidence that a remake of the original Golden Axe was in production, but Sega scrapped it. So they were of the quality and animation of, like, Odin Sphere. No videos, though. There were no videos of the game. The person that he was interviewing, he heard it from a friend at Sega of America. They're trying to get it greenlit, but it was scrapped, and he was pissed off. Which kind of sucks. But you guys want to see a Golden Axe remake that had Odin Sphere visuals?
Yes.
I think that'd be pretty cool. Yeah.
There's been a lot of different videos and demos that have come about of different developers trying to create a Golden Axe game. At this point, I just want a Golden Axe game to be made that's not that atrocity that was on the 360. I want I just want an old school arcade style 2D side scrolling beat 'em up. Just make that.
A little like Dragon's Crown, if anything. Just like that. Make it Golden Axe.
Yeah. Put a reskin on Dragon's Crown with the Golden Axe
here. Yeah, exactly.
Just put
Tyrus, Axe Battler, and Gilius and Dragon's Crown over there.
You're good to go.
Hey, like Joe Montana.
Yeah, Joe Montana football. Sega Holdings president spoke about Shenmue, dormant IPs, and Sega of America. Basically, he said, fuck Sega. No, actually. Hideki Okamura spoke to the Inside Games about many interesting topics. Some highlights. He spoke about the new direction Sega's taking. He made clear about the new Sega company structure. Basically, they're looking at IPs that they have that are dormant, and they want to see which ones would fit, I guess, you know, this century and, you know, things that would make them money, because they're very, I'm not going to say stingy, but careful with their money. Obviously, they've had a history of losing a lot of money, including this year, which is kind of recent. They're researching VR. Now, I don't know if that means that they're trying to create their own VR headset, which probably not, but probably create games for VR headsets that are coming out. I think the Morpheus is coming out, or it's not called Morpheus anymore, is it?
The PlayStation
VR.
It's coming out, January, right?
Yeah, apparently Miku's going to be using it from what I read up on it.
And Dare Live Extreme Beats.
Project X or whatever it's called.
Yeah. Which is cool. I really hope that it actually works, because I do think it's going to be the future of gaming. Virtual reality, I think, is going to happen. Now, maybe not in this generation. Maybe it'll crap out like the VR, the Virtual Boy in the 90s, but we'll see. I think it's heading in the right direction.
We have Virtual Boy on, like, VR headsets. Could that be, like, a thing?
Yeah. What's with Google? They have, like, a Google Cardboard thing, some kind of weird virtual thing. I don't know.
It's pretty much just, like, a Google... All right, so it's a cardboard with, like, lenses in it.
Yeah.
And then I think you just put your phone in it, and I don't even know.
So can I just, like, take some duct tape and just strap my phone to my head? get the same effect?
Just duct tape it. You're good.
I'll be cross-eyed, but it's okay.
Put it in a cereal box.
See, this is the bullshit part. He said games will have to be successful first in Japan, then study if they will get to the West. Now, I don't know. I feel like there are certain games that might not do well in Japan that might do well in the West. I feel like there are certain IPs that were in Japan that didn't do too hot, but then somehow blew up in the West. Mm-hmm. I don't have any good examples right now. But can anyone think of anything?
Herobank did bad in Japan, so it would obviously do bad in the West.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
I thought there was something. Now I feel like I just talked out of my ass, but...
I don't know if the Shinobi PS2 games did better in the West than they did Japan, like Shinobi and Nightshade.
Uh-huh.
Maybe like...
I don't know. Digimon did better here than it did in Japan.
I think that instead of saying that, they should be like refocusing in how to advertise properly these games.
Right. I mean, and even making it as a sort of universal IP, maybe not so much Japanese.
No, I think it has more to do with the thing they are hiring. Like, for example, there's like a big generational breach with the current generation that is operating Sega in the West. Like, most of these guys who are into this company now never played most of these old games, so they don't know most of their history. And you notice that every time they speak about them, like, people ask them about them, and they don't know a thing about it. So yeah. I think it has more to be like that, because these people don't know how to advertise these things, because they don't know of it.
Right.
And that's kind of a problem that, you know, for Sega to properly advertise this. It happened with this mobile game, which is called, I think it was Demon Tribe or Demon Soul, which was made by the guys that made Jet Set Radio. Yeah. They never advertised it because they didn't know there was the guys behind Jet Set Radio doing this game. And it was awful that they never did a proper launch in America for this game. You know, it is really hard for these games to game out, and they never advertise it properly. I think that's kind of a big issue with consoles.
They just throw the game out and expect people to buy it.
You can't do that. You have to understand what it is and advertise it properly and to sell it to the correct people. You know, like, for example, advertising Sonic Boom on a mother's channel isn't exactly the proper way to advertise a video game.
No.
Right. So, carrying on, basically quality over quantity, so they won't be releasing, shovelware with featuring Sonic the Hedgehog, you know, doing laundry or, you know, taking a shit or something. I don't know. But so, basically, he'll be worried about quality and not quantity. Exactly. Aggressive investment in the mobile market. So, basically, what every company is starting to do, Nintendo's starting to do, Konami and all these companies are investing in the mobile market because they feel like the mobile market is the future. Although consoles are doing very well, it's probably a good idea to have your foot in the mobile market as well. So.
Yeah, at least something in the mobiles. Yeah. I mean, considering most people have smartphones now.
And it's a smart investment. Yeah, so that's good. Europe is stable. Sega of Europe. They'll move forward with their upcoming strategies, so nothing caving yet. And they promise to further support Shenmue. So I don't know if that means Shenmue 1 and 2 HD. I don't know if that means they're going to help fund Shenmue 3.
I think the news is we will milk Shenmue as much as I can while the hype is going on. But, you know...
They had a chance, man, and they didn't do anything. They announced one or two HD.
Well, they are announcing a lot of new merchandising and stuff like that, you know, like licensing stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe that would help, like, funding Shenmue 1 and 2 HD remasters.
Possibly. I mean, I think it could be a slight upscaling. Like, I don't think, reboot the whole thing, you know what I mean? Like, don't make a whole new project, just, you know, upscale it, slightly better graphics, widescreen support, Japanese and English dubbing, you know, just shit like that, I think, would be fine. Alright, so Microsoft announces Sega's Xbox 360 backward... Okay, so first, they announce Xbox 360 backwards compatible games, right? Some of them are Sega games. So there were a couple of games that they announced that would be compatible. They include Condemned, Chris's favorite, Crazy Taxi, right. Golden Axe, Ikaruga, Nights into Dreams, all the Sega vintage collections like Golden Axe, Monster World, Alex Kidd, Streets of Rage, Sonic CD, Sonic the Hedgehogs, and Sonic the Hedgehogs 1 through 3. Any ones that are missing that you'd want to see on the 360 or Xbox One?
Bayonetta.
Bayonetta.
Condemned 2.
Definitely.
Condemned 2.
Golden Axe, Beast Rider.
Yeah.
No, I know that. When this first came out, I was critical because it was very hard to find any of these games like on the Xbox store. Mm-hmm. One day out of nowhere, they just showed up on my games to install, like when you go to your games and apps section on the Xbox One.
Do you have a Kinect? Maybe it reads your brainwaves.
It does. I do not have a Kinect. They just showed up, and so I was just able to install all the games out of this list that I had previously purchased, which is pretty cool, and I did all of that, and I was able to install Condemned off the disc, and it even, after it installed, it even updated the game, so... that was pretty neat.
With what?
You like the newest patch and everything?
Yeah. It updated all the patches, so that was pretty neat. Nice. I still get to get into it, but it's just neat to know it's there. I'm interested in seeing some more Xbox 360 games. Hopefully the original Xbox games will come, and that way we can play the first Shinmu game.
Yes.
Shinmu 2.
And I can play Outrun 2, and it'll all work out.
Exactly.
What is nice about this update is that they are not charging you extra money for it, like Sony is going to be doing.
Which I don't like. They brought back backwards compatibility. Originally, you know how they talked about how that wasn't going to be a focus, and now they're delving back into backwards compatibility. Actually, that was mostly Microsoft who said that, I thought.
Less kind of the two of them, and then Microsoft did it, and then Sony was like, well...
I mean, isn't there a possibility to have PS2 games of your own to work on a PS4? Is that impossible? Like, just have...
No, it's totally possible.
Right, because, I mean, possible. You go to the PlayStation Store...
They run both in Linux.
Yeah, and you go to the PlayStation Store, you see these PS2 classics, and Cloud... Dark Cloud, which I really enjoyed, is $20. $20 for a game that came out in 2001 or 2002, which is ridiculous. I get that it's upscaled, and I think it's got 60 frames per second and all that bullshit, but achievements. But I don't know. I don't think it's worth $20.
Like, I think the best way to do this going forward, this whole backwards compatibility thing, is basically take the lead that Fallout did with Fallout 4, and if you pre-order the game and buy it on Xbox One, you get Fallout 3, the Xbox 360 version, for free. I would like to see more games do that going forward, so maybe if the next Sonic game is going to come out on Xbox One, that we will see some sort of Xbox 360 Sonic games that are available. How would you like for the next generation Sonic game, you pre-order it and you get Sonic 360 on your Xbox One? Who wouldn't want that, no. Right?
I'd rather play Shadow the Hedgehog, to be honest.
Oh, man. I'd rather play Sonic Advance or one of the random old Sonic games. Yeah. Oh, yeah, because edgy.
Yeah, edgy. Shadow.
Edgy. Shadow the Edge Dog.
Yeah. Let's carry on. So Yusuke originally wanted to do Shenmue 3 Kickstarter in 2012. It was part of this interview. I believe it was from that biography. It included new details about Shenmue 3's developmental hell, which has lasted for like 15 years. So he said Shenmue 3 was almost announced for Xbox at E3 in 2004, and for some reason we still don't really know the announcement that got which got canceled at the very last minute. You initially wanted to do a Shenmue 3 Kickstarter in 2012, but Sega asked too much for the license. I don't know if that meant by money. Probably meant money.
Yeah.
Yeah, too much. And somehow, I think Shibuya Productions, which is helping produce the game, and we interviewed Cedric, Cedric Piske, he helps find funding for the game. So I'm pretty sure that probably was part of why it was able to get done now. So other quick news that happened during my birth month, motherfuckers. Sega Hard Girls Expo happened in Japan. Hell yeah. Sega console sneakers are now available. I still have to buy the Dreamcast sneakers because I kind of want those. But I think out of those three, they probably look the worst in my opinion. Yeah.
Which three did they
look,
have?
They look pretty girly.
Yeah, or like clown shoes, you know what I mean? like I thought the Mega Drive, I think it was, and the Saturn. I think that's what they had.
Yeah, they had Saturn, Mega Drive, and Dreamcast.
Yeah. Ooh, so the other two, those look really good. Those look
for $60.
Good. Yeah. It's standard. I think like Nike's, Vayner Nike's, $60. So 25th anniversary for Europe's Sega Genesis, a.k.a. the Mega Drive. Congratulations. Get a cake. The Mark III Master System, Fantasy Zone, announced for Sega 3D Classics, Volume 2. Yay! We interviewed Cedric Biscay and the Shenmue Odyssey authors this month, or last month. I'm not even drunk. And
we're just tired.
Probably. Burning that
I'm
midnight
just there
oil.
They're forcing me to read this.
There's a gun to my back. I can't really see it. It's actually a hedgehog. So basically, that was nice. Sega Japan partners with Line and announces its first title. Fantasy Zone collaboration arrived to Sonic Runners, so you get a little bit of Fantasy Zone when you played Sonic Runners. Gummy, Sega's mobile partner, created a VR subsidiary, I assume virtual reality?
Yes.
Virtual racing?
Yeah. Maybe virtual racing, I don't know. Sega Japan announced a new Puyo Puyo entry. We get none of that, of course. Hatsune Miku will tour North America this spring. At least we got that. I kind of would want to go just to observe the crowd. It's like a social experiment.
Martian with twin tails.
Yes.
Oh my god.
I'll look like a Spice Girl, y'all.
Oh my god. Can that be a thing? Yo,
yeah,
we need to go
be Harry Spice. Spice. Let's see.
That's it. It's been established.
Mario and Sonic at the Rio 2016 Olympic Games coming out on February 18th in Japan. Sega hired Joseph Kim to lead their Western mobile market, which is a good thing. Numbskull Designs launches new official Sega hardware merchandise. I believe we did a review of that.
Yes, Graham did it.
Very nice. I would like the cufflinks. We did a Sega PC ports poll, and I don't recall what the results were.
Do you Valkyria remember? Chronicles? I don't know.
That was probably one of the top ones. And Phantasy Star. Streets of Rage, Light Game is looking to get greenlit on Steam. So it's not Streets of Rage, it's a Streets of Rage Light Game, so it's similar to it.
It's classic 90s beat 'em up.
Yeah, that's basically what they mean. And Sega set for January 1st, 2016 as a premiere date for Phantasy Star Online 2, the animation.
How much do we have for December?
In the West or in Japan?
Actually, Japan. We get it because it will be streamed via Crunchyroll. So we
Crunchyroll.
English dub or subs?
Yep.
Usually subs.
Subs.
Or just like, hey, just figure it out. It's all Japanese.
And then we got December, which we start off, I'm going to take over, because Bayo hype, guys. Bayo for Smash.
Bayonetta's our bay.
The word. Yes. That
Bayonetta. What's your mother? She's our waifu.
Oh, we're getting into the waifu wars. Bayonetta got announced for Smash Brothers recently. Her trailer announced and everything. In February, apparently. She's coming out in February.
She's going to be the last playable character for Super Smash Bros.
Yeah.
She's going to be the last DLC character?
Going to be Banjo-Kazooie or Goku or...
Or somebody, some generic Animu character.
Britney
it's like...
Spears, I saw. I would have expected... Just random stuff.
King K. Rool or, like, maybe another F-Zero character. I mean, this...
Uh-oh. I'm taking over, guys.
Take it over.
I think he froze. I think his hype for Bayonetta overloaded his camera, and he is now gone. So Bubsy Twofer is kind of controversial because I don't think a lot of people like Bubsy, apparently. Like, I saw, like, comments when we posted this news. They were like, ah, oh, fucking hell, Bubsy. I guess the original was fine, but I think the sequel was not that good. It was 20% off. It was $3.99 until 3 days ago. So it's a faithful emulation. You can save anywhere at any time. You know, the basic stuff of the... you know, remakes and ports nowadays, they have all that fun stuff. Pause the emulation. Ha, there's a pun.
I see what you did there.
Yes, and there's a Steam trading card feature, exquisite or with exquisite Bubsy comic book cards.
So apparently they're using the SNES version of yes. both of these. They actually yes. announced it?
Yes.
Boo.
And our final and current story, which is dude, you know what? This is funny. So you created this great article describing the Dreamcast 2. Like, some of these interviews that I did, like, I put money in it, and you, like, just wrote it, and it's almost at 2,000 views. Like, still more than what I did for the other.
Oh, my God.
So let's talk about this a little bit, since it is our final story. Chris, you kind of wrote it, so you might want to discuss.
Sure. So I guess it all started back, like, I mean, I think it goes back 7 months ago. This guy, Ben Plato,
he was the one
who created the Dreamcast 2 petition. So this is, I mean, I've seen a ton of these petitions come and go.
Are you talking about that black and orange Dreamcast that I've been seeing, like, everywhere?
Yeah.
Well, it was an announcement of a Dreamcast, but they used, like, the pictures that have been circling around since, like, 2005 as their picture for their petition.
Yeah, and so this petition, they wanted to get 25,000. It was a change.org petition, so you get 25,000 signatures, and then it will go forward. It is, like, declared a success, and it'll go forward to the company or whatever. So they've gotten, actually, over... I want to say at this point 24,000 signatures, so it's actually been pretty successful in terms of, you know, Sega petitions. More recently, they brought together this coalition called Project Dream. They created a Facebook community for it, and it's been pretty popular here the past week or so. And they started going around talking about their plans to try to get Sega to create this new Dreamcast system, where they had a couple different ideas, whether it was going to be a Dreamcast PC hybrid, or it was going to be a new system using arcade parts and next generation arcade pieces and parts from Sega. It was just all these just
kind of like super
crazy pie in the sky ideas. And so there was this one guy, Patrick Lawson, who apparently was, at least allegedly from his own self, was a part of the Project Dream team. And so he started going around giving interviews with Kotaku, Epic Times, and all these different media organizations. He started telling them their ideas, and basically, from what I've been told, it was stuff that was completely not in line with what Project Dream was trying to do. He said he made comments about they wanted to create a Kickstarter where they wanted to get a million contributors to try to help fund this drive to try to get Sega to create this new console, and if Sega wouldn't do it, they would create their own console. So it was not in line with what the Project Dream team wanted to do, and they ended up kicking him out of the team, and now he has been messaging me repeatedly on Facebook and just won't leave me alone. Now,
clear my name.
Yeah.
So basically, this guy screwed the pooch for everybody else.
Yeah, and apparently there's some rumors or allegations that he's this guy called Zach Morris who's been trolling Sega sites for years. I'm not privy to any of that. I have no idea. I don't care. I don't want to know.
Sega has now turned into Saved by the Bell, more or less.
I don't want to go any more down the rabbit hole on this story than I've already been. Basically, just the long and short of it is that Sega's not going to be releasing a Dreamcast 2. There's and basically no chance that Sega's ever going
the
to
internet do that. That much.
And so, essentially, that kind of brings us to today, and that is the last big news of the year, unless from now and the end of the week or so, Sega 3D comes
Power
out
Drift
with some...
Confirmed. I'm just going to go out and say it.
It'll be our luck.
New Dreamcast console.
Big news. But this has concluded the year in review. So,
I'm going to turn my camera back on for this now.
We have one more podcast that we're hoping to get out before the end of the year, and that's basically going in and ranking every Sega release throughout the year. And from worst to best or best to worst, we haven't figured out how we're going to do it as of yet.
I should bring those Sega drinks that podcast, like make them on the podcast and then just drink and rank these games. I think that'd be funny.
Yeah, this would have made the perfect booze cast. We completely forgot about that.
Oh, I've been drinking lots of booze throughout this shit.
Well, I know you have.
You're missing out.
I drank a little bit before, but I didn't want to run all the way downstairs mid-podcast to get more liquor.
All right, so I think that is going to do it. This has been a long
show. Ready to two-day podcast.
Yep. Yeah, this has been... Oh, my God.
Yeah, we started
almost
on...
at, like, 2 hours, right?
Oh, we're almost at 3 hours.
Almost at three hours.
Jesus.
We started on December 26th, and we're ending on December 27th. So
yes.
That should tell you something. But anyway, that is going to do it for this week. We'll be back next week, and we will see you next time. So take it easy.
See you guys.
Thank you.